consume less. Get involved. That's what this weekend is about. Get involved, because tomorrow really, really matters. You bet it does. Please stay tuned for the Peter B. Collins Show right after the CBS News that's coming up next. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Peter King, live in Orlando on this first day of the Atlantic hurricane season. It's the first storm.
Tropical Storm Barry. It's located in the southeast Gulf of Mexico and is forecast to move generally northward or northeastward towards the Big Bend area of Florida.
National Hurricane Center meteorologist Daniel Brown says it'll be a soaker.
We are expecting some rainfall amounts of maybe 3 to 6 inches across the portions of the Florida Peninsula. Certainly in areas that do need the rain.
Barry could dampen those wildfires in North Florida and South Georgia tomorrow afternoon. It's not expected to strengthen, but FEMA's David Paulison says they're ready.
We have good communication plans in place. We have pre-positioned supplies across the Gulf Coast and up the Atlantic Coast. We're ready to pre-deploy as soon as we do get a hurricane.
I'm Peter King in Orlando. Now with more CBS News, here's Jim Taylor.
The man they call Dr. Death, a model inmate.
He's a very good prisoner. He's very compliant. He only received one minor misconduct in the 8 years that he was incarcerated. Generally, he followed the rules.
Russ Marlin, Michigan Department of Corrections, which released Dr. Jack Kevorkian today, the man who says he assisted in more than 130 suicides, says while he still advocates the practice, he will not do it again. It looks like another candidate is getting into the race. Conservative Republican, former senator, former law and order actor Fred Thompson going through the necessary measures to officially start his candidacy. It will not be an easy road, according to Jonathan Martin, Politico.com.
You're still going to have challenges putting together an organization. Look, you don't just, wake up one day and run for president. It takes an organization to win the Iowa caucuses, to go to New Hampshire and win the primary there. He's got to put that together. I'm a fly now.
Andrew Speaker has a long road to recovery.
He will be on medications for at least 2 years.
Dr. Gwen Hewitts, National Medical and Research Center in Denver. That's where the man with extremely drug-resistant tuberculosis is under observation. The reason for his airplane trips, which whipped up so much controversy, his wedding in Greece. The mayor of the island of Santorini says the speaker did not have the necessary paperwork. He and his fiancée left after 3 days without getting married. Update now on those missing Americans in Iran.
I'm Mark Knoller at the White House, where President Bush has now weighed in, saying he strongly condemns Iran's detention of at least 5 Americans he cites by name. In a written statement, he says they should be freed immediately and unconditionally. 3 of the Americans have been charged with spying, which the U.S. denies. Mr. Bush says they went to Iran to visit their parents and conduct humanitarian work.
You want to buy a ticket? New York scalpers can now legally sell tickets to the highest bidder without fear of getting busted. The governor of New York signing a measure officially ending the limits on how much brokers add to the face price. Strong jobs and manufacturing data reassuring investors today about the economy's health. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 40 points, ending at a record 13,668. And the S&P 500 gaining 5 7/10 to finish at a record 1,536. This is CBS News.
Here at Ortho, we get stories like this all the time.
You haven't really heard a scream until your kid sees a bug in the house. So I turn to Ortho Home Defense Max. It kills the bugs I already have and forms this barrier that stops new ones from coming in for a whole year. That's 12 months. I don't have to worry about bugs or screams.
Tell your story. Read others. Find out how to solve your bug problem. All at orthoprotects.com. This weekend, protect your home from bugs with Ortho Home Defense Max. Follow directions on label.
Get the good stuff.
Changing your oil regularly can increase your car's fuel economy. And now an oil change has even more benefits. Because when you buy 5 quarts of Valvoline motor oil at Napa, you'll get a free pair of mechanics wear gloves by mail. Check your vehicle's owner's manual for the recommended oil change schedule. But fresh Valvoline motor oil every 3,000 miles is a good rule of thumb. Pick up everything you need for your car's next oil change at Napa today. Napa. Get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff.
Summer up, summer down. Let's compare car sales now with WWJ reporter Jeff Gilbert.
Toyota and GM showed the biggest sales increases, but it was another rough month for Ford, which saw its sales down 7%, even though there was an extra selling day. GM's top analyst Paul Ballou says overall the industry remains flat.
Really no sign that the market is picking up at this point in time. The comforting news is we didn't see any additional deterioration in the market.
Newer products did well, and with high gasoline prices, it was a record month for hybrid sales. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
A pro-troop organization wants to buy the land outside President Bush's ranch in Texas, where anti-war protester Cindy Sheehan has been holding rallies. She's gone now. Move America Forward wants to build a monument to troops there, and Sheehan is selling the site on eBay. Her sister says it is unlikely that she will sell it to that group, though a cold day in hell is what she says before she'd do that. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
For Jason Stedman, it's not easy getting ahead at work. The competition, rough. The politics, cutthroat. And everyone thinks Jason doesn't have what it takes. Until his rivals go down, one by one. Could it be that Jason's got killer instinct? Killer Instinct, the explosive New York Times bestseller, now in paperback from Joseph Finder. Get Killer Instinct from St. Martin's Paperbacks. Business is war. You need Killer Instinct.
Ah, summer. It's travel time. Vacation time.
Dad, are we almost there?
We're not lost, are we?
Honey, wasn't that our exit?
Daddy, what does detour mean?
Did you even look at the map?
This little travel reminder is brought to you by Garmin Street Pilot GPS, where you'll find all the directions you need.
Turn left on Pine Street.
For the most worry-free vacation ever. Garmin, the leader in navigation.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We also subscribe to all sustainable energy, things like that. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B. We've got 3 hours and lots to talk about. Coming up first, we're going to take a look at a vision for the future called Solartopia. It'll not only free us from Middle East oil, but could free us from fossil fuels in general. Coming up in about a half an hour, Rui Teixeira returns to our program. He is the proprietor of a blog called Emerging Democratic Majority. And we'll talk to him about a number of issues, including the failure of the Democrats to change the president's course on the occupation of Iraq. Next hour, we're going to have some fun. Monologue comedian Josh Kornbluth will be with us. His newest monologue show is called Citizen Josh. And it completes something that he started more than 25 years ago. When he graduated from Princeton in 1980, they gave him one of those empty diplomas because he hadn't finished his senior thesis. And Citizen Josh, the show, is his senior thesis, and he's finally going to get that degree. We'll find out all about it next hour. And as usual, we talk election integrity, election protection, and how the so-called election fraud investigations appear to be at the core of voter caging efforts. We'll explain what that means. And the scandal over the firing of U.S. attorneys. It's amazing how it all comes together. Brad Friedman from Bradblog, as usual, in our third and final hour today. And if you're listening live, you can call in at any time. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. 888-573-8372. And if you're one of our new listeners on KPOJ 620 in Portland, Oregon, send me an email. Let me know what you think of the show, your comments and questions, any ideas you have, or a few brickbats. They all come into the same email, peter@peterbcollins.com. To kick off our show today, Harvey Wasserman joins us, and in his spare time, when he's not trying to fix the stolen election of Ohio from 2004, visit freepress.org to get more on that, he is working on trying to change our dependence on fossil fuels and move us to renewable energy sources. He's got a new book out called Solartopia, and it's subtitled,
Our Green Powered Earth, AD 2030. Harvey Wasserman, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Peter B., it's an honor to be with you again.
Well, it's good to talk with you, and welcome to the Left Coast.
Thank you.
We got you out of Columbus at least for, what, a week?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to the American Wind Energy Association Convention in Los Angeles Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I spoke last night in Point Reyes, and I'm investigating, continuing to investigate our future, which is green power. We are on the brink of an incredible technological revolution that I think is going to transform the Earth even more in the next 25 years than the information revolution did in the last 25.
Well, and it is going to take some work to get us there, but things are much more within our grasp now than even 10 or 15 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. The technology is spectacularly advanced. The cheapest form of new electrical generation is wind power.
Mm-hmm.
And in Solartopia, which is a view of the Earth in 2030, which has been totally solarized, and that, my feeling is that if we don't totally solarize the Earth by 2030, we're not going to survive either ecologically or economically.
Mm-hmm.
And, the hidden reality is that renewable technology is very much here as opposed to nuclear power, which is a total disaster, and coal, which is just about as bad. But with wind, solar, tidal, geothermal, biofuels, increased efficiency, a revival of mass transit, we can and must have a totally green-powered Earth by the year 2030, and that's what Solartopia is about.
And I want to refer people to your Zippy website that is solar-powered at solartopia.org, spelled S-O-L-A-R, topia, T-O-P-I-A, solartopia.org.
Right. I'm the only book, I think, out there that has a theme song from Pete Seeger. He wrote the ballad to Solartopia, and you can click on and hear Pete Seeger sing at least the beginning chorus of the ballad of Solartopia, and then we're asking people to send in verses of their own. And we also have an introduction from Robert F. Kennedy Jr., so it's a good feel, and the reality is that we are really heading towards Solartopia as soon as we get past what I call King Kong.
Yeah, that's quite a challenge. It's almost like getting through Middle Earth, isn't it? With the ring?
Yeah. Well, we made it somehow, lost a finger, but what can I say? Excuse me. So the bottom line is, weirdly enough, although I got to tell you, before I lose track, I have been paid probably the highest compliment in my professional career. Patrick Moore, the alleged founder of Greenpeace, which he wasn't, but he's running around saying he was a founder of Greenpeace and he's supporting nuclear power.
Right.
And in this recent current edition of the San Francisco Bay Guardian, which has a cover story about the attempt to revive nuclear power, Patrick Moore has called me a jerk.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, I feel as if I'm being knighted, actually.
Yeah.
So, I've made it now. But the reality is, I've been fighting nuclear power for more than 30 years with a lot of other good people. In fact, part of my christening was in the San Luis Obispo County Jail in 1984. I spent three delightful nights in the county jail there, being arrested at the Diablo Canyon nuclear site.
Right.
And I'm actually speaking down there in San Luis Obispo on Sunday evening.
Okay.
And, people are still fighting that nuclear plant, but we still have the vision of a green-powered Earth. And that's the important thing. People have to understand that we have the technology right now to power the entire Earth with renewable, non-polluting sources.
Mm-hmm.
If we could sweep the Earth clean of all electrical and other power-generating sources and install right now what we have technologically, we would not notice the difference. I mean, we wouldn't be breathing dirty air and polluted, eating polluted food and all, and drinking radioactive water.
Now, you refer to it as defeating King Kong, and let's just focus on Diablo Canyon and what it brought us. Because, Harvey, I've been watching the whole parade for 25 years now. And Pacific Gas and Electric, which built Diablo Canyon, and when it was near completion, not only had to deal with the earthquake fault, the Hosgree fault that they had ignored, but also they had installed the cooling system ass backwards, 100% backwards.
Right. Well, they had their heads up their ass, so it seemed a little right.
But so this led to huge cost overruns.
Right.
And then PG&E was just hell-bent to stick us, the ratepayers of California, with their mistake.
Which they did do during deregulation.
Well, what first they tried through, the PUC, the Public Utilities Commission. Then they tried through the courts. And when that didn't work, they took the company into bankruptcy during the blackouts that we incurred early in the new century. And they had their way with us.
Absolutely.
They were able, under the deregulation bill, to recover what were called stranded costs,
right,
which meant that we would pay the highest utility rates in the nation until maybe PG&E got all their money back. And, of course, we've seen no relief, and it appears that they should have recovered most of the cost overruns from Diablo Canyon. But it illustrates their muscle and how they were willing to bring the fifth largest economy in the world to its knees to get their way. So how are we going to get them to loosen their grip on the power grid and the entire infrastructure that you refer to as King Kong, coal, oil, nukes, and gas, and get them to convert to your vision of Solartopia?
Well, you've got it exactly right, because it's a question of power. And in this instance, the reason there are institutional barriers to the progress to Solartopia, totally green-powered Earth, is that when we have renewables, when we have wind, solar, biofuels, and geothermal, and the other renewable sources of energy, they are decentralized, and they allow us to circumvent entirely the utility system. For example, look at the Sacramento Municipal Utility District, which is a municipally owned, publicly controlled utility district.
Mm-hmm.
When the deregulation crisis hit and the fake shortages that were imposed by Enron came about, the lights never went on. The lights never went off and the rates never went up in Sacramento. Why? Because they had their own renewable sources, not entirely, but they were energy self-sufficient. They weren't dependent on the manipulations of the Kenneth Lays and George Bushes of the world. And this is what has terrified King Kong, or the centralized utilities. And this is why they're fighting renewables and why they're trying to bring back nuclear power. You know, nuclear power keeps coming back because it's impossible to drive a stake through the heart of an industry that doesn't have one. And in this case, nuclear technology is just an advanced form of psychosis. And all the people who are advocating nuclear power are really trying to divert the inevitable, I believe, revolution in renewable energy. And the reason that they fear renewable energy is because you and me and everybody else listening to this show, if we had solar power and community-owned wind and biofuels grown in our backyards, we wouldn't need the utility industry. We wouldn't need the General Electrics of the world. And that's why, and the PG&Es, and that's why they're fighting this tooth and nail.
Well, and really the King Kong corporate leaders are the very people who I am subjected to at the beginning of public television's news hour every night.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Archer Daniels Midland and
right.
General Electric and, the real corporate
Exxon
gang.
ExxonMobil, the usual suspects, you know,
yeah.
The petroleum broadcasting system. and it's a shame because if they didn't control the media, we have you, thankfully. And the internet and websites like solartopia.org and freepress.org that people can turn to for actual information.
Yeah.
But I've been doing this since 1973 when I was living on a farm and the local utility tried to build a nuclear plant near our house. And 34 years ago we said, well, if they only wouldn't put the money into nukes and instead put it into renewables, someday renewables would be cheaper. Well, that someday has happened. It's here. It's now. The cheapest form of new electrical generation is wind power,
mm-hmm.
and solar power is right behind. You know, and here in California, you have these tax subsidies, which are good, the state subsidies, which actually allow people to put photovoltaic roofing shingles on their house. This technology is all here. The only reason it's expensive is not because of production costs, but because of demand. So many people want renewable technologies mm-hmm. and additions to their home and so on.
Harvey, I got to take a break or they're going to knock us off the grid.
We'll wait for you right here.
We'll continue in just a moment with Harvey Wasserman, his new book, Solartopia. And visit the website, solartopia.org. More in a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
P&T Puppet Theater reminds listeners, always keep a watchful eye out for all children. Remember, you can't keep an adventurous child from trying to learn, but you can keep track of him while he does. For help or information on the prevention of child abduction, call your local authorities. This message is courtesy of P&T Puppet Theater, serving our community with pride and integrity for years. Give them a call at 831-754-2411 or visit ptpuppets.com.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you?
Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
From San Francisco, we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Are you ready for the future without fossil fuels, including coal, oil, gas? And nukes aren't fossil fuels, but, they're dangerous. Are you ready? Are you steady? Can we go forward, huh? We're talking with Harvey Wasserman. He's an activist and author, and his new book is called Solartopia. Visit the website solartopia.org to get more information. And let's see if I can get this Pete Seeger tune to play here on the radio, Harvey.
All right.
I got too many pages up on my screen here. Where did it go? Here.
Pete Seeger is a great national treasure.
And how old is Pete?
He's about 84, I think, and just in great health, and just a phenomenal guy. I was able to sit in his living room, and he read Solartopia and loved it, and decided to do a theme song.
All right, let's listen to this.
Solartopia, 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 don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world. I can't remember.
There you go.
So that's the hook, and you're inviting people to go to the website and submit verses.
Absolutely. We want your verses. Give us your verses.
Uh-huh.
And we'll put it into the long song, and sooner or later we'll have a ballad. Well, over the next 23 years in the transition to Solartopia, I expect several thousand verses, you know. And so when you've got your show in the year 2030 and we're both, you know, pushing 80, we'll play the verses for an hour and listen, remember old Pete Seeger and what a great contribution he made.
All right. And let's talk briefly here about the four pillars that your vision of a Solartopia rests on. Total renunciation of fossil and nuclear fuels, all-out conversion to renewable energy, complete commitment to maximum efficiency, including revived and solarized mass transit and passenger rail systems, our automotive love affair you call a hoax, and I guess you want to bring that to an end.
Absolutely.
And zero tolerance for production of anything that can't be reused or recycled, including chemical-based foods. Solartopia is an organic post-pollution world. That's quite a vision, Harvey.
Yeah, well, it's fairly simple. It's been developing for a long period of time. I don't think there's much arguing with it as far as I'm concerned. You know, about mass transit, the destruction of the mass transit system in this country was the eco-crime of the 20th century. There are conspiracy theories that are true, and this is one of them. In 1920, Alfred Sloan, the chairman of General Motors, decided his chief competition was not Ford or Chrysler, but the mass transit system.
Yeah.
And he set out with Standard Oil, which is now Exxon, and the glass and rubber companies to consciously destroy the mass transit systems in 80 U.S. cities, including Los Angeles, Detroit, Columbus, Ohio, where I live. And they did it, and as a result, we wind up with the interstate highway system and, you know, millions of automobiles and a major global warming problem and an addiction to oil that didn't need to happen. And so in order to get back on our feet, we're going to have to revive and rebuild our mass transit system.
And people can read more about it by picking up the book Solartopia or going to the website solartopia.org. Now, Harvey, while I have you, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you to comment on a recent letter, an open letter, that you and your buddy Bob Fetrakis wrote to Al Gore. He, of course, is on a book tour. He's making some real intelligent points about the lack of political participation, the lack of rational approach to political policy. And you correctly take him to task for his failure to really fight hard and long and to the finish over the presidential election of 2000.
Absolutely. You know, he failed to call for a statewide referendum, or rather recount in Florida 2000, which would have given him the election. But then, you know, you could say that was a strategic error, but then in January of 2001, the Black Caucus challenged the seating of the Florida delegation. Correctly, and under the law, they needed a senator to join them so that there could be a congressional investigation, and Al Gore prevented that from happening.
Yeah.
And we've seen that ugly scene in Fahrenheit 9/11. Al Gore needs to explain why he would not allow a constitutional challenge to the obviously stolen electoral ballots from the state of Florida, which would have given him the presidency and spared us these god-awful 7 years so far of George W. Bush and the reign of error and terror there.
And on the news hour that we were just slamming a moment ago, the other night, Gwen Ifill interviewed Gore, and to her credit, her final question was, gosh, did you fight hard enough in 2000? And he had a kind of rote answer. I was disappointed, frankly.
Yeah, well, both he and John Kerry have to face up to the fact that they were each elected president of the United States and walked away from it, handing us over to, you know, the one thing the American people can say with pride about George W. Bush is that we never elected him president. And, you know, Al Gore and John Kerry have a lot to answer for, but specifically Al Gore as to why he refused to allow a U.S. senator to come forward to do the constitutional challenge that it was certainly warranted on the fraudulently unelected electoral college delegation.
Yeah, it was a bunch of activist judges who made the decision. We don't like that.
No.
Harvey, thanks for your work, and I want to direct people to freepress.org, which is where a lot of your work about elections and in particular the 2004 election in Ohio can be found. Thanks for joining
Peter,
us today.
You're the greatest. Thank you so much.
Harvey Wasserman, the new book, Solartopia. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
This is Todd the Taxi Driver. And today, I've got a really important subject to talk about. This may surprise you, but it's not about politics. It's not about my perspective or my ideas. It's about what makes it possible for me to share my opinions with you every day. I'm talking about advertisers. Unfortunately, it costs a lot of money to own a radio station and keep it up and running. For those of us that have radio programs on KRXA, we're able to be here because of the support of local advertisers. So, what's my point? If you're a local business and you like hearing what I have to say each day, even if you don't like what I have to say, but you support free speech, call the station and offer to sponsor this spot. Maybe you like Billy Sunshine's show on the weekend, or you listen to Hal and Coach every afternoon. If you like progressive radio, then become an advertising sponsor. And together, we can point out the hypocrisy of the right and continue to share the views from the left. This has been Todd the Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
There's a new full-service spa and salon in the heart of downtown Monterey at 397 Calle Principal. Gigi's Spa and Salon offers massage, facials, manicures, pedicures, haircuts, and styling, specializing in hair coloring, makeup, eyelash color, and extension, all wedding needs, and much more. Gigi's Spa and Salon is an experience that you must see to appreciate. It's a beautifully relaxing experience for both men and women. All the products used are the very best. If you are pregnant and want your nails or hair colored or permed, it's not a problem because all our products are odor-free and all natural. From now until June 30th, reserve a massage or body treatment or a facial, and you will get a free special treatment that's exclusive to Gigi's Spa and Salon. The Gigi's Signature Spa Shampoo. This is an experience your whole body will never forget. Call 372-0888 now and reserve your spot so you can treat your body to the unique services that await you at Gigi's Spa and Salon. Visit MontereyGigiSpaSalon.com for more information.
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right. Dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready!
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Actually, be part of the effort to take back America, Peter B. style. Can you help me?
As I was walking, oh, ribbon of highway, I saw above me, coming the skyway. I saw below me, a golden valley. Yeah, this land was made for me. I roamed and rambled, and followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond.
24 minutes past the hour. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins, and joining us right now is Rui Teixeira, and he is a blogger, an activist, a policy guy. Is that a fair assessment, Rui?
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers the bases.
All right. We hooked up last year at the Take Back America conference, and I recall talking with you at one point after that. And I'm not sure of your current affiliations. I've got your blog up here at emergingdemocraticmajorityweblog.com. What else are you involved with right now?
Well, actually, that weblog is morphing into a different site called the democraticstrategist.org, which is combines my own efforts, Ed Kilgore's and a number of other people, Stan Greenberg, Bill Galston. But anyway, I do that. I'm a fellow at the Century Foundation, the Center for American Progress, also at the New Politics Institute, and a few other things that are too numerous to name.
So yeah. Well,
I hang out and do stuff.
I know you're very busy, yeah. And how do you explain yourself to your kids?
Well, I tell them I work at a bunch of think tanks downtown, and that seems to satisfy
them. Well, good. Well, I wanted to talk to you about a couple of things that are on the blog, and we can wander in any direction. This doesn't have to be a highly structured thing. But I'm still reeling from the failed strategies that the Democrats tried to employ to bring the president into some sort of reality and break the gridlock of denial and Republican support for the president's war with blank checks and incredible rollbacks in the checks and balances that have been part of our Constitution and our system for so long. And in particular, to see Pelosi and Reid essentially give up and give in to the president on the supplemental was very hard to take. And let me stipulate that I understand that both Pelosi and Reid did their best. They played weak hands as strongly as they possibly could. And I give them credit for that. But as Pelosi likes to say, at the end of the day, they really came away with bupkis. And it appears to me that their strategy was flawed from the beginning, thinking that there was a way to cut a deal with this president and this White House.
Well, I think the issue is, in some degree, at least in terms of the micropolitics of this, whether you blame Reid and Pelosi and the Democrats for this, or whether you blame the moderate Republicans for not hiving off on this issue. Given that they didn't, given that the Republicans remained pretty solid for Bush, the sort of the political calculus in Congress is it was very difficult to get anything through over the heads of Bush and the Republicans who are still in Congress. I mean, there's got to be a fracture in the Republican Party that's pretty large before you can make this happen.
No,
I think that's why, despite the fact that Reid and Pelosi pushed this thing, ultimately it didn't happen. I'm not so sure they could have done anything terribly different than what they did, given the failure of the moderate Republicans to stand up for what's right.
Well, I do agree that this war is or the occupation will end and be wound down when principled Republicans come to their senses and block the future efforts of the White House. That said, let's focus on two aspects, and these are not exclusive, but these are the two things that I see.
Mm-hmm.
One, that the Democrats repeatedly used the language and framing put forward by the White House around this debate over the supplemental. It was about the troops. And on your blog, you have a cite from Glenn Greenwald, who's been on our program before. And he speaks, and I agree with his point of view, that by permitting the debate to be about who is or is not supporting the troops, that the Democrats really got off track, and they needed to keep reminding the American people and those recalcitrant Republicans we're talking about that it's the White House that has failed to support the troops, that many of these supplemental needs for body armor and Humvee armor and other things were, huge blunders by the Pentagon under Bush's control. And that instead of laying these problems at the feet of the president and his administration, the Democrats bought into the language that this supplemental was about, quote-unquote, supporting the troops.
I think that critique has some merit. I think it's still a little hard for some Democrats to adjust themselves to the new political landscape. And in the new political landscape, it just isn't the case. The Republicans have this big advantage in national security, and the Republicans have this automatic buy from the public on who is patriotic and who supports our troops. If that's true, then there's less of a need than there once was, if there once was, to sort of strenuously remind everybody every 5 minutes about, yes, we too support the troops, yes, Democrats are patriots and are for a strong defense. I mean, it calls for a somewhat different set of tactics. If you look at the latest CBS News poll, for example, right now the public trust the Democrats over the Republicans to make the right decisions in Iraq by 51 to 33. That's an 18-point margin, and that's pretty amazing. I mean, we haven't seen those kind of margins ever, I think. So the way you adjust to this landscape, it seems to me, is, as you say, you don't use the Republicans' frame. You try to establish your own, and you try to push that forward. I mean, the political calculus can still be difficult, but you're sort of dealing yourself a bad hand if you use their rhetoric instead of yours.
Well, and as this was occurring, the White House issued another veto threat over the amount of the proposed raise for our troops. And 3% is the maximum number the White House says it can accept, and the Congress was trying to offer 3.5%. And that's a clear sign that the president doesn't support the troops. And yet, I haven't seen that used effectively as an attack element against the White House.
I agree.
All right, the other angle that I see is political hardball, Rui. And that is that I learned back there in civics class that appropriations bills must originate from the House. And while the conference committee with the Senate can, cause it to wiggle a little bit, in fundamental terms, the president can't spend a dime more than the House is willing to authorize and then the Senate is willing to endorse. And so the fallback plan that Murtha brought up about 6 weeks ago, after the threat of the veto and then its actual event, was, well, hey, let's put him on a 60-day allowance. And that way he's got to keep coming back to us for more money, and that gives us more opportunities to really advance this debate and peel off more Republican support. I don't understand why they didn't pursue that angle and really went down to the wire with an all-or-nothing supplemental that they ultimately blinked and accepted.
Well, I assume the logic behind that was that if you sort of put that kind of a system in place, it makes it look like you are holding the funding for the troops repeatedly hostage to political decisions in Washington. And the thought might have been that that's perhaps not exactly how we want to appear.
Okay, but the intent is to curb the behavior of the administration. And again, if the language is properly put forward, it would define it that way. And, you know, we'd say, well, you know, we're going to let Halliburton scramble a little bit or some of these other contractors that have been getting incredibly high margin deals from the Pentagon. Let them stretch their cash out a little bit. We're not going to fund the contractors. We're just going to fund the troops.
Yes. So I think it's a plausible approach. I just don't think you're going to see the Democrats get behind it until you see the aforementioned split in the Republican ranks. I think then they'll have the guts to do something like that, probably not before.
Mm-hmm. So the Democrats tried to put a good spin on it and say, well, you know, this debate is going to continue and we've made progress and we've shown the president what we believe. You know, those are fair statements, but you know, ultimately they haven't changed his course in any perceptible way. How do you see the summer evolving with the Petraeus plan to bring a report sometime in late August or September about the progress or lack thereof based on the so-called surge?
Yes. Well, I think the most important thing here is going to be the facts on the ground, regardless of what Petraeus says. And I think as far as we can see right now from the way the situation is developing, those facts on the ground aren't going to change in any way that's going to make people feel much better about the war in Iraq. Again, if you look at this recent CBS data, you've got the highest, I think they've ever, 76% now say the effort in Iraq is going badly. And in terms of the surge, 76% say it's either had no effect or made things worse. And I think this is because the public sees in the papers what is going on there. They see what happened on Memorial Day. They see, you know, just this endless stream of suicide bombings and violence and soldiers killed. And there's just no sign that it's going in the direction that Bush has alleged that it will, once we do, that it was going to once we did the surge. Therefore, I think the public is going to become more and more impatient with this. I mean, I think we see this in the polling data very clearly. And I think that the pressure within his own party is going to build. I mean, Bush has his own reasons for staying the course. He doesn't want to be the second president to lose a war. He's an obstinate son of a sea cook. He's got a lot of reasons why he doesn't want to back down. But there's a lot of people in his own party now who are getting more and more worried about what this means for the party politically, if he sticks to his guns.
Yeah. We're talking with Rui Teixeira here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question or a comment you'd like to join us, please do. Call us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Rui, I want to turn to pesky domestic issues. I, for one, believe that the Democrats need to ratchet up the heat on Alberto Gonzalez. And I think that the no-confidence vote was a nice idea, but I really think that they should be talking about impeachment proceedings for this attorney general, because even members of his own party describe how they not only lack confidence, but that they feel that he has politicized the Justice Department and that he's been, at best, an inept manager and, at worst, a political operative who was doing the bidding of the White House and not operating in any manner as an independent attorney general.
Yes. Well, I certainly think he deserves to be impeached, and he's probably impeachable in a technical sense. I think the political calculus is, are we better off trying to impeach him, or are we better off leaving him twisting in the wind? And I think at this point people are still leaning toward twisting in the wind, you know, fearing that if they push the impeachment thing forward, then the focus becomes on that as a process rather than on Gonzalez and his many, many, many problems he presents to the Republican Party.
And what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with it? Nothing wrong with that. Twisting in the wind.
No.
I mean,
what?
I don't have a strong.
No, honestly, I think that the Democrats need to push for impeachment because that's the way he will jump. He will get out of the way of that freight train if they get it rolling down the tracks. And the Democrats seem reluctant to really hold these people accountable up to and including impeachment. And here we have such a glaring, obvious example of a guy who has intentionally lied under oath to the Senate and the House. And that's just the beginning of the laundry list of his failings.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the bedtime, the sick guy in the hospital.
Ashcroft, sure. Can you believe they found a way to make Ashcroft look principled?
Yeah, right. It does boggle the mind. Well, I think this is something that is being debated within the Democratic ranks. And as I say, I think right now they're still leaning toward leave them up there twisting, and we don't really need to push the process forward much more than that. I don't have a strong view on this one. I could see it either way.
All right, we're going to take a break and return with Rui Teixeira, and if you want to visit democraticstrategist.com or the blog emergingdemocraticmajorityweblog.com. That's a mouthful and a lengthy typing task. We'll continue in a moment. You want to join us? Lines open at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins.
KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Tomorrow Tomorrow Matters, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, will be moving from Sundays to a daily spot, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll still be bringing in the guests, and you'll still be calling in with your questions and ideas, and we'll still be working collectively to set the standards for a more sustainable future. But we'll be doing it 5 times a week. Starting May 14th, join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m., because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
This Sunday morning at 10 on Rock, Roll, and Real Estate, meet Carissa Colley, president and founder of REI Conferences, one of the fastest-growing real estate investment and educational companies in North America. Also on Rock, Roll, and Real Estate, we've sent you to see the Rolling Stones, Madonna, U2, and now we want to send you to see the Police. Rock, Roll, and Real Estate, where you get front row seats to the best rock concerts and the best information on investing in real estate. Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 9 minutes away from the hour. Glad to have you listening wherever you might be today. We're talking with Rui Teixeira. He's a think tank guy, a fellow from Washington, D.C., Center for American Progress, and other institutions. And am I saying your name right? I always like to check that.
Teixeira.
Teixeira?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and your first name, R-U-Y, you say Rui.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Correct.
All
yeah.
right, we like to get it right. And Daniel joins us from Santa Cruz. Hello, Daniel, you're on the air.
Hello, Peter B. Hello, Rui. Thanks for coming on Peter's show. He's got some great guests. But I'm calling about Mr. Gonzalez and these caging lists that were brought up in the testimony of the hearings. Can you tell me about that and where you think we could go with that? Over.
I'll tell you this, that when we talk with Brad Friedman from Bradblog about an hour away, we're going to go into detail on Monica Goodling's testimony and on the whole concept of voter caging and how it relates to the U.S. attorney scandal. As things become more and more clear, we're seeing those connections. And,
yeah, it seems to be some sort of connection there. And I'm
well,
afraid
and
of,
Tim,
you know,
Tim,
elections are going to just be worthless as long as they're manipulated like this.
Well, and it's interesting because Greg Palast brought the issues up, and suddenly Tim Griffin has resigned from the U.S. attorney post he was appointed to, I think, in Little Rock. So things are happening pretty quickly. Rui, you have a comment?
Well, I mean, this is a well-established problem. Even before Goodling's testimony, we know that basically, by and large, if you look at how the issue of who's allowed to vote is handled, it's the case that more Democratic voters seem to get knocked off by these procedures than Republican voters and in a related constituencies. And that's no coincidence. I mean, they're working pretty hard at it. And, of course, there was a recent report that showed the whole issue of voter fraud has been handled in such a way. I mean, even reports have been, official reports have been suppressed that more or less established that the concerns about voter fraud are, in fact, vastly overwrought. And
excuse me, how were they suppressed?
To suppress certain kinds of voters from casting their ballots. So well, we know all this pretty well at this point.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, go ahead.
How were they suppressed, Rui?
Well, basically, they know the kind of voters they don't want to vote, and they try to implement procedures in those precincts that will make it more difficult for those folks to cast their ballot, usually under the guise of trying to combat voter fraud.
No, but I mean, how were the findings suppressed?
I believe this was a report that was issued by a commission that was, I think, quasi-official. I'm not remembering the exact name. It was, I think, the Century Foundation, in fact, the organization I'm affiliated with was connected with this, but it was under the guise of some commission. And this report was just not issued for quite a while because it said stuff that was not consistent with the Republican line on the problem of voter fraud.
Thank you.
All right, Daniel, thanks for your call today. Now to Arcata, North Coast. Jake's on the line. You're on the air. Jake, go ahead.
Hey, Peter B. Hey, Rui. As far as Gonzalez goes, I have to agree with Peter B. I think the way that Democrats get rid of Gonzalez, if they want to get rid of him, in fact, is just simply drop the articles of impeachment. Gonzalez will resign. And as far as this whole issue with backing down on the timelines for bringing the troops home,
mm-hmm.
all the polls I saw said that the public was very much on the Democratic side saying, yes, we want timelines, we want the troops home by a date certain. So how is it exactly that Democrats backing down this issue is good for the country or good for the Democratic prospects in next year's election?
Well, the question isn't whether the public supports having a timeline. The question is whether the political calculus within Congress at this point will sustain that kind of politics without sort of a certain rump of Republican support. And the judgment of the Democrats in Congress is that it cannot. I mean, it's not that the public doesn't want it. It's that the micropolitics of Congress don't work to make that happen at this point. Those are two different things.
Right. I understand that. I guess what I'm saying is I think the Democrats didn't display such a, unfortunately, you know, timid attitude towards the Republicans. If they got serious about throwing that bill in their face just continually, at some point the Republicans would start to break off and go against Bush. But unfortunately, it seems like the Democrats have backed down way before they had to.
Well, maybe, maybe not. I mean, I think their thinking is that, in fact, the Republicans are ready to break at some time in the not-too-far-distant future as the situation in Iraq continues to not improve as the political prospects for the Republicans in 2008 look more and more dim.
But we're paying...
The Republicans who you'd think would break with them will eventually come to do so. It's a little bit difficult for them to do it because, you know, they are members of the Republican Party.
Right.
They're getting a lot of heat. The base of the Republican Party, for better or worse, is still pretty supportive of the Iraq War. So this is not an easy choice for them.
And, Rui, you don't have to be a Cindy Sheehan who has suffered a personal loss in the form of a son being killed in Iraq to understand that, you know, we lost 115 or more American service members just in the past month. We're spending $10 billion a month in Iraq. We're spending more in Afghanistan. We're losing 15 American troops a month there on average this year. And so many people find it difficult to be patient and to hope that the process will, incrementally move forward. The American public is way ahead of our elected leaders
right.
on these issues.
Well, and to just make it more complicated, there's absolutely nothing wrong with calling for something that Congress at this point, for various reasons, isn't likely to do. What's gotten us as close as we are to ending this war and toward taking the kind of moves that people who call the show advocate is that people are continuing to kick up a fuss about this and pointing out that, you know, there is no easy way out at this point. It is time to leave Iraq, and it is time to have a timeline and set a withdrawal date, and this ain't working. So I think people should keep shouting, but it just may take a little while to develop.
Rui, less than a minute remaining. Let's put it on a more positive light, and that is that there are a lot of open seats, or at least challenges available, particularly in the Senate, where 21 Republicans are up for re-election next year. Do you see the calculus that the Democrats can win it back, and do we have a deep enough talent pool to win those critical races?
Yes. I think the Democrats look very good moving into 2008. I mean, the basic distribution of seats favors them. I think the Democrats have a pretty good set of people who are there grooming to run as challengers for these seats, and I think a lot of these Republican incumbents are not looking so good. And some of them already bailed, like Wayne Allard. I think that this is not a good environment to be a Republican incumbent running for election in any kind of contestable state. And the same thing is true for representatives.
Rui Teixeira, thanks for joining us today. Great to talk with you.
Sure. Bye.
Go to democraticstrategist.com or emergingdemocraticmajorityweblog.com.
Why are realtors from Los Angeles spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to defeat Measure A here in Monterey County?
It sure isn't because they want to save our farmland.
The developers and supervisors oppose Measure A because it puts an end to their cozy development deals.
Cozy development deals like the massive Rancho San Juan development that was approved by the Board of Supervisors but rejected by 76% of voters.
It's true. 76% of the voters opposed Rancho San Juan because it was wrong for Monterey County. But the developers pushed it through anyway.
That's why we need to pass ballot Measure A to protect our quality of life.
Measure A is a common-sense, community-minded plan to control growth that was written by the people of Monterey County.
It lets the people decide how fast we should grow.
So join the League of Women Voters and the California Nurses Association, who all support Measure A, because it lets the community have a voice about our future.
And that's why the Community General Plan Committee paid for this message. Vote yes on Measure A.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Day one of hurricane season, and there's a tropical storm in the Gulf.
It's forecast to move generally northward or northeastward towards the Big Bend area of Florida.
Dr. Jack Kevorkian has sprung from prison.
He's 79, but his eyes look as though he's 29.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. The 2007 hurricane season is off to a fast start. Tropical storm Barry formed this afternoon in the Gulf of Mexico, and it's headed for the west coast of Florida. A tropical storm warning is posted from Bonita Beach northward to Keaton Beach. Daniel Brown at the National Hurricane Center tells us it's not likely to become a hurricane.
It doesn't look like that it's going to have the opportunity to intensify much. The upper-level winds are not all that favorable over the Gulf of Mexico, so we don't even think it will strengthen much, but it certainly is expected to move fairly quickly up towards the Big Bend area and probably make landfall sometime later tomorrow.
And Barry will be a blessing to the parched Sunshine State.
We are expecting some rainfall amounts of maybe 3 to 6 inches across the portions of the Florida Peninsula, certainly in areas that do need the rain.
Now this.
Hey, Ken. Picking up a prescription?
Yeah, my erosive acid reflux.
Me too. I take Protonix Pantoprazole Sodium.
Does it work?
One Protonix tablet every morning helped control daytime, even nighttime acid reflux symptoms.
Nighttime symptoms too?
Yep. It even helped repair acid reflux damage. And I save on my Protonix prescription.
Think I could save on my copay?
Check your health plan. Hey, where are you going?
To call my doctor about Protonix.
Protonix copays are not less than generic drugs. Prescription Protonix heals acid-related erosions in the esophagus and relieves associated frequent and persistent heartburn. Most patients heal within 8 weeks. Your results may vary. Doctors may prescribe Protonix longer to maintain healing. Studies lasted 12 months. Other serious stomach conditions may still exist. In studies, the most common side effects were headache, diarrhea, and gas. Go to ProtonicSavings.com or call 888-5-REFLUX to learn more about Protonix, acid reflux disease, and savings. See our ad in the Saturday Evening Post. Ask your doctor if Protonix is right for you.
Jack Kevorkian, otherwise known as Dr. Death, was released today after 8 years in a Michigan prison for helping a terminally ill man end his life. It feels good, Kevorkian told reporters.
Oh, sure. Yeah. After 8 years, yeah. Wonderful.
Looking good.
One of the high points in life.
He was greeted by CBS News correspondent Mike Wallace. Kevorkian will appear on 60 Minutes this Sunday.
He has to check with his lawyer every once in a while just to make sure that he's not overstepping the bounds of what he's permitted to do.
Kevorkian's activities are strictly limited, says Pat Vitale of Detroit station WWJ.
Under the terms of his probation, he can't assist in any suicides, be present at any assisted suicides. He can't counsel or advise anybody thinking about going this route, but he can talk about it, and he plans to be very vocal. He has said in the past few months that this is still something he really wants to push. It is illegal here in Michigan. He wants to see it made legal, and that's one of the big things he's going to be involved in.
Kevorkian is 79 now. Andrew Speaker, the man with a dangerous strain of tuberculosis, says he's sorry he never meant to put fellow airline passengers at risk when he traveled after learning his diagnosis. He's facing at least 2 months of treatment at the National Jewish Medical and Research Center in Denver. At the Centers for Disease Control, they're still trying to nail this down. CBS News correspondent Peter King reports.
CDC head Dr. Julie Gerberding says they're making progress in their investigation, especially in notifying passengers who were in the rows near Andrew Speaker on a flight to Paris last month.
We believe that we have contacted all of the U.S. passengers, people who were residents of the United States or citizens of the United States who were seated in the five rows that are the concern.
She says Speaker's father-in-law, a TB expert who works at the CDC, has been involved in some tests but is not involved in the investigation. An isolation order for Speaker remains in place for now. Peter King, CBS News.
Fred Thompson took the first step today. The actor and former Tennessee senator formed a committee to lay the groundwork for a possible run at the Republican presidential nomination. Jonathan Martin is the senior GOP reporter at Politico.com.
It's important to keep in mind that the Republican Party is very strong in the South, and the South has not had one of their own in this contest so far, and now they're going to with Senator Thompson. So he's going to be formidable. The real question is can he sustain that initial burst? Can he put together, again, on the fly, the organization necessary to compete in those key early states?
Thompson has been recruiting advisors who served under President Reagan and the first President Bush. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Here at Ortho, we get stories like this all the time.
You haven't really heard a scream until your kid sees a bug in the house. So I turned to Ortho Home Defense Max. It kills the bugs I already have and forms this barrier that stops new ones from coming in for a whole year. That's 12 months. I don't have to worry about bugs or screams.
Tell your story. Read others. Find out how to solve your bug problem. All at orthoprotects.com. This weekend, protect your home from bugs with Ortho Home Defense Max. Follow directions on label.
Get the good stuff.
Changing your oil regularly can increase your car's fuel economy. And now an oil change has even more benefits. Because when you buy 5 quarts of Valvoline motor oil at Napa, you'll get a free pair of mechanics wear gloves by mail. Check your vehicle's owner's manual for the recommended oil change schedule. But fresh Valvoline motor oil every 3,000 miles is a good rule of thumb. Pick up everything you need for your car's next oil change at Napa today. Napa. Get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff.
The State Department said it could take up to 10 weeks to get...
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Thanks for joining us this hour on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're going to have some fun. A monologue specialist, a guy who has created one-man shows that are riveting and funny at the same time, joins us this hour. His name is Josh Kornbluth, and he's based right here in the San Francisco Bay Area. Hello, Josh.
Hello, Peter.
Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And among your many credits, you host a public television show that originates from KQED in San Francisco. You're tying up about 100% of their local production budget, right?
Well, that's that, and that just goes for my hair care products, yeah.
And it's not even a cooking show.
No, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just talking. Who would ever think that there could be a broadcast that's just talking?
Yeah. And you're heading into your third season, right?
Yes, yeah. We're on hiatus right now, and then, we come back for the third season in the fall.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you, Peter.
I mean, you know that in year five, the residuals kick in and the whole Seinfeld thing develops.
I'm looking forward to that. I think it's very similar kind of money as well, as you know, in public television.
Almost as much as you're getting paid to join us today?
Yeah, except without the benefits.
Right, yeah. And Josh has a new monologue that I got to see opening night just a couple of weeks back called Citizen Josh. And this is a kind of academus interruptus situation. My Latin is weak. It's been a long time.
Well, it's and I'm in no position to correct you, but yes, it's... Among other things, the piece is my senior thesis to graduate from college, which I was supposed to do in 1980.
Right.
But I got sidetracked.
But I just think it's wonderful that Princeton is an institution that recognizes that not everybody can actually meet that deadline for a senior thesis.
No, I think, you know, I think maybe I'm stretching it a little bit, having taken it 27 years, but it is very cool of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. And I did everything else. I mean, it's not like I just, you know, showed up for a couple of weeks. I mean, I had to labor through 4 years at Princeton, so, and I did everything else except my thesis. So,
right. Uh-huh.
They got my records out of deep storage to make sure that I had done so. And as soon as this thesis is accepted, I hope it's accepted.
But they haven't actually given you the stamp.
No, they have not. They're playing it by the book. What can I say?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, as I talk about in my show in Citizen Josh, I have my own. I have my my old advisor advising me, even though he's retired from teaching,
mm-hmm.
Molin. So I'm doing it. You know, I'm doing it the best I can.
Right. And you managed to tie together what appear to the people in the audience at first to be kind of disparate elements.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to ruin it for people who might ultimately see the show.
Which I hope is 110% of the listeners.
Yes. And if you take it to Portland, I'm sure we can sell it out up there.
You know, I love Portland. I love performing in Portland.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, so, hello, Portland. I hope to be there soon.
Okay. And, for instance, tell us about Ohlone Park and how it led to activism on the part of Josh Kornbluth, who doesn't appear to be a guy who has any arrest record for political protests, for example.
Well, Ohlone Park is next to where we live in Berkeley, California, and it's just this little strip of green. It's named after the Ohlone tribes of Indians who used to be the citizens here originally. And
you mean the indigenous peoples?
The indigenous peoples. I'm not talking about the Jews, you know. Even before the Jews. There were the Vikings, the Jews, and then at some point even before that, I think there were what became known as American Indians. And,
mm-hmm.
But this park, there was a playground right next to me, and it was it was just the right age for my son. He had outgrown a tot lot, you know, these little playgrounds for little tiny kids,
mm-hmm.
and he was ready for something a little more challenging. But this playground in Ohlone Park, just right next to where we live, it was just in disrepair. I mean, the swings that didn't have swings in them, which tends to take a lot of the joy out of it.
It does, yeah.
And it was just, you know, it was just terrible. And so I would, you know, in my typical sort of passive way, I would sort of grouse about it, you know. But then I found out a neighbor of mine named Kristen Limecooler was actually trying to fix it, going to the city and finding out that there were funds to, you know, fix it and looking up the kinds of equipment to get. And it's sort of a very basic, simple thing, but what it is, what it taught me, it came at a particular time to me experiencing what she was doing. And that was at a time when I was really questioning just how connected I was to my country as a citizen and to any sense of sort of participating democratically. I've been really frustrated by the last couple of presidential elections.
Oh, yeah?
Which my guy lost both times and to the same person, and amazingly so. And
we believe, Josh, fraudulently so.
Fraudulently so. And both of them, the second one, too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in fact, last hour we were talking to Harvey Wasserman.
Uh-huh.
He's an investigator from Columbus, Ohio. And he and Bob Fetrakis have dug into that. There are 184 different demonstrable incidents where votes were shifted. And not once did they shift in favor of John Kerry in Ohio in 2004.
You know, but the thing is, I mean, you know, with Ohio's apparatus there, I don't know, I'm not an expert on this, but it was all set up in favor of the Democratic candidates. I'm just kidding.
Yes, you are.
No, you're depressing me. It's bumming me out because, I mean, it's bad.
Yes.
I know it's bad.
Yes, it is. So your guy lost.
But my guy lost. But the thing is, there's more than voting. As important as voting is, there's this sense of like an emptiness that I felt politically, and also of anger, you know, and frustration. Like, are we two countries? You know, are we really red and blue in that stereotypical way? Or is it the fact that we can't talk to each other? I mean, you know, if those things were all true, then it seems sort of very hopeless for any kind of democratic participation or for any kind of healing. And so what it turns out is that, in my own roundabout way, you know, that seeing people like Kristen doing things locally, and people at my local PTA doing stuff, seeing people do things where they are, in their local neighborhoods, in their communities, and becoming active, showed me kind of, or brought me to the kind of the roots of, what feels like the roots of really being a citizen. Mm-hmm. That it's not just sort of voting and then hoping my guy wins or gal wins, but that it involves participation. And that it has to. Like, I mean, we have to participate.
Well, and Josh, unless Red Diaper Baby and some of your earlier pieces were a total fiction, you have activism in your blood.
I do have activism in my blood, yes. And no, I mean, they're not total fiction. But the thing is, you know, I mean, I was raised in the old left. But the thing about it is that it's one thing to sort of be raised in an ideology. But it's actually another thing, as you know, to actually do something. Like, I've had a lot of conversations in my living room and kitchen, but I don't know that those conversations have necessarily helped the world, you know, beyond mm-hmm. my living room and kitchen. And so, it's one thing, I think, to, you know, talk to my friends and fellow travelers, so to speak, but it's another to talk to all sorts of people and to listen to people. And, I was really affected by this book. There's this book I read called Talking to Strangers by a scholar named Danielle Allen, who also went to Princeton after I did, although she graduated right away for some reason. And it's a book about the habits of citizenship on the ground, and it really affected me. It's just, it's like, yeah, that's, you know, I can't, I mean, I have to actually do the scary thing of going out and talking to people and talking mm-hmm. to strangers and talking to people who disagree with me in a respectful way.
Well, and we now have, because of the Fox News Channel and other propaganda machinery, we have people who believe in a whole set of facts that are not facts, and who then who are challenged by people like me, mm-hmm. and then they say, well, I just can't be right because Bill O'Reilly says, mm-hmm. and some people say. And so we really do have a problem that is getting worse and worse, where it's very hard for extremists, political activists, to communicate with the other side.
Well, in all honesty, Peter, I mean, I have just really such amazing respect for you and for the other broadcasters and journalists who've been throughout this incredibly dark period in our recent history, you know, who've been trying to get the word out and have been getting the word out that is not the corporate line. I really admire you, and one of the things that's been frustrating to me, I don't know if I ever mentioned to you in any of our previous conversations, but my original ambition was to be a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up not being able to meet deadlines, which, as you can see with my senior thesis, goes way back. But
yeah, the deadline problem is an issue.
It's an issue. It's an issue when it comes to journalism and things. But one of the things that I've found in myself is, like, I wanted to be sort of like you, or, you know, like people who speak the truth to power and stuff like that, but I haven't been that sort of person. And so I've been trying to figure out, like, what can I do in my own sort of way? And that's what brought me to, well, I tell these stories from my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do. And so, you know, for a living. And I enjoy it. And
you're good at it?
And I'm good at it, thank you. And so I really have, you and my mom now are aligned on that point, which is excellent. I'm building a crew. And so,
well, go to MySpace and Friendster, and you'll just be a hit.
Oh, do you think so?
Oh, yeah. You'll have more friends than we can count. Hey,
you know,
Josh,
and you're right, and that's right in my age group. I just turned 48, and definitely I think that's our niche right there.
Hold that thought. Unlike public television, we have to take a break here.
A break?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll be back with Josh Kornbluth, and we'll take some calls if you want to join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Have you heard the show weekdays from noon to 2 on KRXA 540?
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the Secret Garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955 or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's about talking. The song is called Talk Talk by a group, Talk Talk, and talk, 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 talk. That's what we do here on the radio. That's what Josh Kornbluth does for a living. He's a monologue artist, a performer, and his very new show is called Citizen Josh. It's playing in San Francisco for how long, Josh?
Through the 17th of June.
Through the 17th of June. And is there a road tour planned?
Yes. It's just all being negotiated now to various people.
All right. Well, you let us know, and we'll pass along word to our listeners in various areas who might be able to see it when it does get on the road. Billy wants to join us right now. Billy from Capitola. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with Josh.
Thank you, Peter B. I know you have to be nice to Josh, but everyone knows I say when I don't like something.
That's right.
Hey, Josh.
Sir.
I love you. I've seen everything you've done except this new thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, I'm the cheeseburger millionaire from Santa Cruz.
I thought you were. I thought you were Billy. I thought, I mean, how many Billys from Capitola can there be? Don't you have a radio show?
In fact, I do on this same network that is housing Peter.
Yeah.
On Sundays at 3 o'clock from 3 to 5. So the obvious questions are two for you.
Yes, sir.
And that is, of course, when are you coming to Santa Cruz? And then you'll come on my show and we'll promote it.
Love to.
And number two is, you know, down here, Channel 54, which recently was partnered with KQED,
mm-hmm.
but they're not playing your show down here. And I would love to see it, and I'd like you to sort of mention to them that perhaps we would enjoy it.
I would, and if you would mention it as well,
I sure
you know,
will.
Using your influence, which far exceeds mine.
No, wait a minute. When you flex your power at public television, don't they cower?
They don't cower so much as it looks like a smirk. I don't know. No, they've actually. I'm such a newbie or whatever to broadcasting, but KQED has been really, really been very good to me. It's been really. Really nice, and so I will mention to them because obviously I would love to. I'd love to be out there.
Well, and they give you those microphone covers, you know, the windscreens.
Yes.
With the really flashy colors.
Well, and I've been trying to establish the signature green windscreen, you know, just to have an established signature color windscreen. You know, it just seems like Dan Rather would do the same. You know, so, but I. But they sometimes say they have and sometimes they don't. So sometimes it becomes a signature red windscreen. But in any case, I'm known in the industry now, or at least at KQED, for my excessive plosives. When I'm on mic, when I'm doing the voiceover, like, please, come to see. You know, it's really, they move the mic like 90 miles away from me, so I don't do my plosives.
Yeah.
Hey, I still have a few things to learn.
Billy, before you go.
Yeah.
I just wanted to update you because I know you heard yesterday when I called the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee back to try to secure my dinner with the president.
Yeah, I wasn't sure you wanted to talk about this on the air, buddy.
No, it's okay.
Good.
Because here's the headline. The Republican National Committee has sacked its entire telemarketing team.
I saw that. I think you did it to them. That's great.
I will not take full credit, but the timing is curious, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
But you know what?
Before I go.
Hold on, Billy. Go ahead, Josh.
No, I just want to say I suspect that the whole thing was a political appointment process. I really do. I think investigations are going to see those telemarketers were not chosen for their skills.
Oh, they were incredibly skillful. They had a woman open it, and then had a guy close her. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. It really was. What did you want to add, Billy?
Well, to Josh, when he talks about needing to go out and speak truth to power and the like, and to do it in a reasonable fashion, Josh, what you do already is valuable enough. You make us love a nerdy guy like you, and that teaches us to love everybody, and that's really valuable. And not all of us have the ability to do what Peter does, which is to calmly talk to the other side. And I think there's room for all of us, and including those of us who, like me, just express outrage and can't be nice at all to the other side. It's all legitimate.
And Billy was born without a volume control on his voice.
Yeah.
Just doesn't work.
Microphone handling. Oh.
Now, Billy, I have not heard the cheeseburger millionaire reference before. Can you spill?
No, Josh would have to tell you.
Well, it's this. I mean, you know, I'm on my own when I tour. You know, even in Santa Cruz, I mean, I'm just a little waif, you know, and Billy took me under his wing, and he bought me cheeseburgers.
Aww.
And
he was working on his IRS,
my
love,
tax
love and taxes.
Act, and doing my and it was great and because when he works on it, he'll take comments from the audience and the like, and we just sort of had lunch, and I talked about finance and theater, and we had, just had a great time.
Yeah.
And all those stolen millions from Silicon Valley, eh, Billy?
Exactly.
Uh-huh. All right.
I mean, you must be talking about Billy, because if I knew how to steal millions, I would have.
So. Thanks, Billy.
Thanks, buddy. Take care, man.
We're going to take a break and return with Josh Kornbluth, and upcoming, I want to talk about love and taxes and why Josh Kornbluth is so in favor of taxes.
Yeah, great.
And we'll turn him into the Republican Committee's telemarketers when they hire new ones. You can call us toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. I'm Peter B. Collins. This program's produced by Katrina Rill. Brian Urban taking your calls.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Why are realtors from Los Angeles spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to defeat Measure A here in Monterey County?
It sure isn't because they want to save our farmland.
The developers and supervisors oppose Measure A because it puts an end to their cozy development deals.
Cozy development deals like the massive Rancho San Juan development that was approved by the Board of Supervisors but rejected by 76% of voters.
It's true. 76% of the voters oppose Rancho San Juan because it was wrong for Monterey County. But the developers pushed it through anyway.
That's why we need to pass ballot Measure A to protect our quality of life.
Measure A is a common-sense, community-minded plan to control growth that was written by the people of Monterey County.
It lets the people decide how fast we should grow.
So join the League of Women Voters and the California Nurses Association, who all support Measure A, because it lets the community have a voice about our future.
And that's why the Community General Plan Committee paid for this message. Vote yes on Measure A.
How dangerous was he really? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. America's most famous TB patient, Andrew Speaker, has now apologized to any passengers he may have endangered on his airborne escape back to America. He says he's exhausted, not because of his trip, not because of his tuberculosis, he feels fine, but from the pressure of being treated like a terrorist. His father doesn't think it's fair, and he may have a point. It's becoming increasingly evident that his trip posed very little actual danger. He had no symptoms. His wife, and you'd think if anyone would get infected, it'd be his wife, test negative. And his wife's father, who actually works with the CDC doing tuberculosis studies, didn't think Speaker's condition was dangerous enough to postpone the wedding. And Speaker insists that the other health officials he consulted before making his trip also stopped short of forbidding him to leave. And he remains pretty sure of that because his father, also a lawyer, took the precaution of taping those conversations. And his father says those health officials, in advising his son not to travel, said, quote, "We have to tell you that to cover ourselves, but he's not a risk." He's going to cancel his wedding based on that? Considering the TB rate in America is the lowest recorded since reporting began in 1953, I'm betting it'll turn out that the actual danger posed to the nation by this case was slightly less than handing in your homework late. The real question is why, if we are this scared of TB, doesn't the government start paying the drug industry to do what it has hesitated to do so far and start mass production of an effective TB vaccine? Hey, maybe they ought to apologize. Now this.
Get the good stuff!
Hi, Michael Waltrip here. You don't have to drive a 500-mile race to know the importance of getting the most out of a tank of gas. Let NAPA help make your fuel go further with 3M Complete Fuel System Cleaner for just $8.49 a bottle. It not only keeps your car running smooth, it also restores power and fuel efficiency. The pros have trusted 3M car care products for years, and you can too. NAPA. Get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered.
And he wrote
except
that.
He's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
3, 4, 1, 2.
We continue our conversation with monologue artist Josh Kornbluth here on the Peter B. Collins Show. He's got a website, and if I'm not mistaken, it's named after him, joshkornbluth.com. Is that right?
That is correct, Peter.
That's where people can find out about all things Kornbluthian?
Yes.
And we have logo wear available?
Soon.
Yeah? I think Josh exclamation point would do it.
Josh...
Maybe two exclamation points.
You know, this is why I've always felt I needed a professional marketing team.
Well, I'm not it.
Yeah.
Josh, next I want to talk about one of your previous shows called Love and Taxes. Billy referenced that in his comments a couple of minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to try to clue you in a little bit more about this bizarre phone call we had yesterday. I got this voicemail from a guy named Bradford Limley, and he invited me to dinner with President Bush. And so I call back this number. And we get the treatment, as Billy said. First of all, a very professional woman answered the phone. Then she plugged me into a recorded message from Congressman Tom Cole of Oklahoma, I think. And that was followed up by the closer, a male who was a kind of hard-charging, neocon-sounding guy. And between the congressman and the closer, they were both trying to pander to me about lower taxes. And the flip side of that, which is Nancy Pelosi wants to raise your taxes, and we need to nip her in the bud. That was their actual language. And I said, you might want to rephrase that. You know, this is the first woman speaker in history, and, you know, nipping and buds, I just think there are better words you could use.
There's something Freudian going on there, definitely. Yeah.
But I want to talk about this obsessive, compulsive pandering that the Republicans use to some benefit of their own about taxes and how Americans really are unable to process the message that lower taxes means that government can't provide the services that we expect. And we've seen that in glaring examples like the response to Hurricane Katrina, the recent tornadoes in Kansas where the National Guard didn't have any trucks because, well, they're conveniently parked in Baghdad.
Mm-hmm.
And so Americans don't seem to get the disconnect that lower taxes, particularly for the wealthy who can afford to pay them more than the rest of us, that this really means that our life is going to suck more.
Well, it is. To some extent, it seems to be in the American DNA. Of course, our country began with a tax revolt, and there's some element in which people feel a distance from their government, and so then that's exploited. It's exploited by people, you know, like the people who called you to have dinner with the president. And it's exploited by people to sort of try to get people to feel, well, if I'm alienated from government, then government shouldn't have my money or any of my money in taxes, even though I wouldn't have been able to make my money were it not for my government and were it not for the society that is paid for by people's taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this very, very strange kind of mania. It really is perplexing. I mean, I guess keep working until citizens say, well, this is enough. We're not going to be manipulated against our own interests anymore.
Mm-hmm. And you had some very special relationships develop with the Internal Revenue Service.
Yeah, well, I was a little bit late. You know, we've spoken about my problem with deadlines.
Yes.
And that extended as well to my taxes, and so I was behind, and I owed a lot of money. And my piece Love and Taxes, which was my previous collaboration with David Dower, who's also my director and collaborator on Citizen Josh, focused on how I started with, you know, trying to deal with this problem of how am I going to solve, you know, all this tax stuff that I owe, and I did owe it. But it really, what it evolved into is a piece that talks about how important taxes are. And I ended up meeting with several times with a former IRS commissioner named Sheldon Cohen, who just this really wonderful, impressive guy. I think he's the youngest when he was in his, like, he was in his 30s when he was the head of the IRS. And he really, you know, spoke reason to me. You know, he spoke truth to Bluth, I guess, you know. And, you know, but talked about, I mean, you know, what, I mean, essentially that this is the issue, I think, is the issue of being against taxes, being against paying for taxes is, well, the taxes go to the man, right? And the man is going to make these decisions that are bad. And, of course, a lot of decisions are bad. But I think in democracy or in even an attempt at democracy, we have to take the responsibility as adults that we are also the man. I mean, that's, we're not just fighting the man, we're the man. And so we have to, you know, provide what is our due to run stuff. And if we disagree with how the tax money is used, and I have, as I know you do, and many or even most of your listeners do, have enormous disagreements with how our tax, some of our tax money is spent.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say for war, for example,
yeah.
Or for, you know, padding the coffers of corporations and that sort of stuff. Well, then we have to do something about it, and we have to get our representatives to do things about it. But if we stop paying taxes, then we won't have schools, we won't have roads, we won't have society.
Well, and Josh, how much of this, in your view, is linked to the brainwashing that we have received from television and big screen films, which leads most Americans to believe that they are just about to become millionaires, if not billionaires, and therefore they identify with Donald Trump and not with you know, the guy flipping burgers at pick your greasy joint.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm not at all an expert, and my gut feeling, I mean, I've really been really affected by doing a lot of the reading that I did for my senior thesis. I read, you know, that Citizen Josh became, but I really did a bunch of reading, including I read a book called Self-Rule by a late scholar named Robert Wiebe, W-I-E-B-E, I think, W-E-I-B-E, something like that, that talks about sort of our history of how we, as citizens, relate to our government, whether it's distant from us or whether we feel it is carrying out our will. And my feeling right now is that if people did participate and people felt that power of participation on a local level, on a state level, on a national, however that they can, that they would, it would be, at least in my hopeful thinking, an antidote to the kind of anger and disconnect that leads people to just go, well, heck, I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to pay for this,
yeah.
Even though you're benefiting from it. So I guess to me, I guess my focus is so much now on people participating in making important decisions in their lives and talking to each other, and that if that happened, that it would lead to good things.
All right. Dave,
talking rather than yelling.
Dave in Eureka, join us. You're on the air with Peter B. and Josh Kornbluth.
Oh, Peter and Josh, you know, I have actually felt times of feeling good about paying taxes because, you know, I saw the roads, the highways being built and the dams, and I saw the mental hospitals and things going in, and I felt good. But right today, if there was any way to avoid paying a dime in taxes, it'll go to this government and in return to Halliburton and Bechtel and Lockheed Martin and Mobil Exxon and the Cheneys and Bushes and that little Carlyle group. I wouldn't want to put a penny into this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Simple, I guess. That's my point of view.
Well, I understand your point, and it is a conundrum that we all face. And that is that, you know, we don't get to choose how every dime is spent. And there are people, even going back to the Vietnam era, who used to calculate, you know, what percentage of their taxes were going to go to the Pentagon, deduct that, and then mail the rest in. They, of course, were hounded by the Nixon gang and the IRS crews that came after them, and they paid taxes plus penalties and interest for their political statement. But it is something that we've wrestled with, many of us who have a conscience, saying, well, gosh, you know, I want this money to go for schools and for health care, and I'll even pay for some roads.
Right.
But we don't get to work that way, and so it does leave us sometimes feeling powerless and disgusted.
It is. I mean, and the conundrum is absolutely right, Peter, and the caller is, I mean, you know, that's, of course, that he's totally right, and I mean, I agree, I have the same feelings, but But yes, I mean, as you've said, you know, as you've said, I mean, we don't get to choose where our money goes. And I think if, you know, if our response is to opt out, and he's talking about if he could, you know, which he didn't say he actually does, but he said if he could, you know. But if our response is to opt out and not to participate economically, politically, socially, then I think we lose. I could be wrong, but that's my feeling, is that we lose. But it is a genuine conundrum.
It is. And the other side of it is I can hear some of my conservative listeners, the guys who like to call and tweak me, saying, oh, there he is. He's just one of those tax and spend liberals, and he's ready to spend other people's money, you know, on things that he favors. And it does cut both ways, where I understand that there are conservatives who pay their taxes begrudgingly and think that they're funding somebody's abortion or, you know, some something that they don't approve of.
But that's also the case, too, Peter. What you're saying is that's why, I mean, it's so important to have these conversations and for people who consider themselves liberals or conservatives alike to talk to each other, because everyone has things to bring to the table. And, you know, I have so much to learn from people, and it's not, these aren't clear issues. I mean, it's incredibly, I mean, I was talking, I've been doing these, what we're calling them, democratic dialogues with political theorists after the Sunday matinees at the Magic Theater, at the Sunday matinees of my performances. And I was talking to Josiah Ober from Stanford last week, and we were talking just about how difficult it is to have a society that's pulled together in some democratic way when you raise the scale. I mean, you know, with the ancient Greeks, you had thousands, you know, and then you go up and thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions. This sense of hundreds of millions of people considering ourselves to be one people in some way is an extraordinary, it's an extraordinary thing to do and to try to do. And it's, you know, I just really, in a way, I think, you know, we need to give ourselves some props for that, too.
Well, I hear your point, and just to illustrate it, I spent last weekend on the East Coast, and in flying back, you're wedged in there with all these big people in tiny, tiny seats, and I had the window. And looking out as you see the landscape of Middle America pass below you, you do have that sense of how vast our country is, how many people we have, and how, despite all of our differences in the red and the blue and the right and the left, that most of us do identify ourselves as Americans, and for the most part, we feel good about it.
And for the most part, I would add, you know, we agree on most things even. I feel, or maybe I'm, you know, maybe it depends how you define the subjects, but I'm saying the things of, you know, about democracy, about the basic ideas of people power, about you know, being good to our family and to our neighbors and treating your neighbor as you would have your neighbor treat you. And I mean, those basic feelings, I think, are overwhelmingly shared by people across ideological spectrums. And I really think that this idea that we cannot talk to each other or should not, or that there are enemies and that there are, you know, the demonization of people, it is so counterproductive. And I understand it, you know, it has its thrills. I mean, you know, I'm a sports fan, and whenever the Los Angeles Lakers win, for example, a little part of me dies, you know. But, you know, but that's not, you know, I mean, that's, you know, to treat actual other citizens that way and not sort of not in terms of a game, it's so counterproductive. Natural but counterproductive.
Indeed. We're going to take a break and return with Josh Kornbluth. Visit his website, joshkornbluth.com. And the new show, Citizen Josh, is performed through mid-June in San Francisco at the Magic Theater. Get information at joshkornbluth.com. We'll continue in just a moment. My lines are open if you'd like to chat with us. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. And, hey, I got a website, too, peterbcollins.com. Go there. See what happens.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
There's a new full-service spa and salon in the heart of downtown Monterey at 397 Calle Principal. Gigi's Spa and Salon offers massage, facials, manicures, pedicures, haircuts, and styling, specializing in hair coloring, makeup, eyelash color, and extension, all wedding needs, and much more. Gigi's Spa and Salon is an experience that you must see to appreciate. It's a beautifully relaxing experience for both men and women. All the products used are the very best. If you are pregnant and want your nails or hair colored or perm, it's not a problem because all our products are odor-free and all natural. From now until June 30th, reserve a massage or body treatment or a facial, and you will get a free special treatment that's exclusive to Gigi's Spa and Salon. The Gigi's Signature Spa Shampoo. This is an experience your whole body will never forget. Call 372-0888 now and reserve your spot so you can treat your body to the unique services that await you at Gigi's Spa and Salon. Visit MontereyGigiSpaSalon.com for more information.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty news shows or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Good afternoon. This is Michael Kidd with traffic for the Monterey Bay Area. Greenfield, an accident, Elm Avenue and Arroyo Seco. It's an injury accident. Solo vehicle overturned. It landed on its wheels. The roadway is partially blocked. Emergency crews are on the scene. Ben Lamont, 9 northbound at Glamador Road. Disabled vehicle. That dump truck is blocking the northbound lane. Live Oak, Capitola Road at Loughman Drive. An accident. Two vehicles are involved. And also in Watsonville, Highway 152 eastbound at Fallowfield Lane, an injury accident. A vehicle went off the roadway. It landed in a strawberry field. The CHP is on the way. Santa Cruz Roadwork, 1 northbound at M-Line Avenue, off-ramp closed. 24 hours a day for roadwork scheduled until December. Realty World, where the right agent and the right website make all the difference in the world. Visit ehomeresearch.com for everything you need for buying or selling a home. Michael Kidd for KRX.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, 9 minutes away from the hour. I want to give a shout out to Biz in Montana. He checked in by email, listening online. Thanks for joining us today, Biz. And the word is out, so I won't attempt to keep it secret. This coming week, I'll be sitting in for Tom Hartman on the nationally syndicated Tom Hartman program on Air America Radio, heard on many of these great radio stations. And that'll be Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. Tom will be in Dubrovnik over in the old Yugoslavia, and he'll be originating live from there on Monday and Thursday. So that's going to be a fun week coming up next week. Hope you'll be able to tune in and catch it. We continue now with Josh Kornbluth. As we mentioned, he is the one-man show, and the new show is called Citizen Josh. It completes his senior thesis from Princeton, from which he almost graduated in 1980. And he's hopeful that the wheels there are going to turn and that he will actually pick up his degree as a result of this one-person show. And, Josh, I also want to bring you greetings from Bill Tallon.
Reverend Billy.
Reverend Billy was on our show recently. And he, of course, was the director of the Solo Mio Festival, where I first, I believe that's where I first experienced Josh Kornbluth.
Well, it was my second show that I did, Haiku Tunnel, and that was the first one that, I remember Bill Tallon said, we have a festival called Solo Mio, we'd like to commission your second piece, because I just did my first piece. And I was like, wow, and then I was like, I had this idea in mind, it's like, it would involve money in advance, because commission, you know.
Right.
I was like, okay, what's the commission? How much do I get paid? I didn't say anything about paying. I sort of want to invite you to breakfast. Bill's fantastic. He's so talented. He's doing wonderful work.
Yeah, and Starbucks loves him. All you got to do.
Oh, they're crazy. They're going to have a Bill Talon blend, I'm sure, pretty soon. Yep. Especially if they can make it out of Bill Talon, I think they'll be very happy about that.
And you can find out more about him if you're wondering who Bill Talon is or Reverend Billy at reverendbilly.com. It's a very powerful website. So, Josh, tell us a little bit about how you work and how you develop these monologue pieces. The current one is driven, I guess, by a desire for completion. But are you always, looking for new ideas and, for example, working over your son Guthrie to pump out some creative gem that you can turn into a show?
Well, I actually specifically don't want to use my son as material. I know it worked really well for Kathy Lee with Crosby, but or whatever her son's name was. But I really, Cody, I guess. But I mm-hmm. just. You know, I don't want to use my son for that. And so even in this piece, which very much derives from sort of the urgency I feel because I'm a father, I didn't want my son to be a character so much. So I don't refer to him by name. And but, yeah, in terms of the
I did talk with Guthrie after the show.
You did.
And I told him about the system that a San Francisco Chronicle writer used to use, Adair Lara. That whenever she mentioned a member of her family, they got $20.
I know you. He passed that along to me, Peter.
Did so, he?
You know, he's an enterprising kid. So, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. What I do is I don't really have to look for subjects, at least so far, because I just tend to start with something very broad, like democracy or taxes, and then I improvise. I start improvising just based on that, and then the pieces emerge so far. And mm-hmm. so that's really how it goes for me, and I'm not, like, looking for stuff, but stuff does seem to find me. Perhaps it may have, you know, I think it's helpful to be naturally neurotic and a procrastinator, because that tends to lead to situations that maybe when recounted can be entertaining. But mm-hmm. I don't look for it. I actually try to – I'm trying really hard to live a normal life. It just has eluded me.
And do you have a quota for yourself? Do you write every day? Do you write once a month? Do you have a whole development process?
I don't really, I mean, because I don't actually write stuff. I mean, I take notes for myself, but I don't actually write the script. I just speak it in the improvs, and then work with my collaborator and director, in this case, David Dower, to home in on what is now a word-for-word piece. But, for example, the piece you saw opening night, I've now performed a bunch of times since then, and it's almost exactly word-for-word what you saw, but I actually, no one has written it down. It's going to be transcribed so that future people can run the tech on it. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really have I don't have that sort of a regimen, especially because I don't specifically, I don't actually write. So it's a matter of setting up improvs for myself and having a lot of conversations with friends and strangers and interviewers that make their way into my piece.
Do you start to generate a new show when the revenues from the last one start to tail off, or what drives that?
You know, the revenues start to tail off immediately, I found. That's a trend. They never actually have a surge.
Now, what about the DVD revenues from Haiku Tunnel and Red Diaper Baby?
Actually, Haiku Tunnel chugs along. It's pretty cool. But, yeah, the revenues, I don't know if you know about the film industry, but...
Well, Art Buchwald told us a little bit about it.
Yes, but anyhow, I haven't become wealthy off of that. But, it's... No, I just, I mean, I love working. I love making stuff. And so I always sort of have a bunch of ideas for a new piece to do, and I sort of follow. I think it's less that when the money tails off than when I feel sort of that it's getting stale, mm-hmm. you know, that I'm not learning from telling the story over and over, and that I want to tell a new story. But I also I do want to make another feature film, maybe even next year, based on Love and Taxes or on Citizen Josh or something, starring myself. I tend to get the biggest parts when I cast myself. I've noticed that. I audition other people to play me, but they're just never quite good enough.
Well, you know, if you really want a box office hit, you got to put Will Ferrell in the seat.
I think, definitely Will Ferrell is my sidekick. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Maybe, the fun-loving Trotskyist roommate. I think it's in his repertoire. I really do.
Well, Josh, I've enjoyed spending this hour with you, and I've enjoyed every one of the shows that I've been to. I want to recommend that people check out Citizen Josh either during the San Francisco run, and some of our listeners aren't nearby, but hopefully you'll have a road tour, take it to Portland and take it to Santa Cruz so Billy can buy you more cheeseburgers.
Absolutely.
And I certainly wish you all the best. And the fall season for the Josh Kornbluh Show on KQED kicks off September?
Yeah, around September, I guess. So, yeah. Things are nice and busy. Peter, it's always a great pleasure.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, Josh Kornbluth, and his website is named after him, Josh, KornBluth.com. Stay tuned. One more hour of the Peter B. Collins Show as we talk about elections, about voter caging. What the hell does that mean, and why does Karl Rove and those operatives in the White House care so much about it? Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com joins us shortly here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Carmo Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Carmo Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Carmo Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Carmo Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Carmo Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Carmo Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Check the calendar, it's the first day of hurricane season. Check the weather map, and there it is, right on schedule.
Tropical Storm Barry. It's located in the southeast Gulf of Mexico, and it's forecast to move generally northward or northeastward towards the Big Bend area of Florida.
Daniel Brown of the National Hurricane Center says it's not expected to strengthen much. Florida is more than ready, reports CBS News correspondent Peter King.
On the first day of the Atlantic hurricane season,
I'm very comfortable where we are, very comfortable that we are ready for this hurricane season.
FEMA's David Paulison won't get a hurricane this weekend, but Tropical Storm Barry is headed for Florida, possibly North Florida, which has been parched and scorched.
Good news. We're in dire need of rainfall.
Gene Andrews is tending bar at Harry's and Carabel on the Florida Panhandle.
It hasn't rained here probably in, I'd say, about 4 months.
Forecasters say several inches of rain could fall on wildfire areas in North Florida and South Georgia. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
After 8 years behind bars, Dr. Jack Kevorkian got out of prison today, still believing in assisted suicide, but no longer practicing under the terms of his parole. Shortly after his release, Kevorkian was interviewed by CBS News correspondent Mike Wallace.
What would you do if a desperate person comes to you, Jack Kevorkian, and says, I need help?
It would be painful for me, but I'd have to refuse him. Because I gave my word that I won't do it again.
The full interview is on 60 Minutes this Sunday. Kevorkian, now 79, says he will campaign for laws that allow doctor-assisted suicide for the terminally ill. Andrew Speaker has begun at least 2 months of treatment for his rare and dangerous form of tuberculosis.
We obtained the first chest X-ray and chest CAT scan last night, and there were absolutely no surprises.
Dr. Gwen Hewitt at the National Jewish Medical and Research Center in Denver says the chances of catching TB from Speaker are low. He's very apologetic about his decision to fly after learning his diagnosis. Speaker says he never meant to put his fellow passengers at risk. U.S. forces continue to hunt al-Qaeda terrorists in Somalia. CBS News has learned that a Navy destroyer opened fire today on suspects in northern Somalia. The target said to include a senior al-Qaeda leader wanted in the 1998 U.S. Embassy bombings in Africa. In the U.S.-Iran confrontation, it got personal today.
I'm Mark Noller at the White House, where President Bush has now weighed in, saying he strongly condemns Iran's detention of at least five Americans he cites by name. In a written statement, he says they should be freed immediately and unconditionally. Three of the Americans have been charged with spying, which the U.S. denies. Mr. Bush says they went to Iran to visit their parents and conduct humanitarian work.
National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley says the same blunt message has been sent to Iran privately. The Dow up 40 points today. This is CBS News.
Ah, summer. It's travel time. Vacation time.
Dad, are we almost there?
We're not lost, are we?
Honey, wasn't that our exit?
Daddy, what does detour mean?
Did you even look at the map?
This little travel reminder is brought to you by Garmin Street Pilot GPS, where you'll find all the directions you need.
Turn left on Pine Street.
For the most worry-free vacation ever. Garmin, the leader in navigation.
What's on your summer travel wish list? The beach? Your mom's? Someplace you've never been? Well, Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels are giving you a free $50 gas card this summer to go anywhere your heart desires. With our Easy Choice Rewards program, just redeem 6 stamps for your free $50 gas card. After all, your wish list awaits. Call 800-4-CHOICE or visit choicehotels.com today. We'll see you there.
Earn 1 stamp per night. Maximum 5 stamps for qualifying stay. Redeem 6 stamps between 6-1 and 8-16-07 to receive gas card. For details, visit easychoiceonline.com.
It was a bizarre take on reality TV. A broadcaster in the Netherlands promoted the Big Donor Show, in which patients suffering kidney failure would compete for a kidney from a woman dying of a brain tumor. But when viewers tuned in, CBS News reporter Lauren Comito says they learned it was a put-on with a serious purpose.
In the end, the producers got what they wanted, an extraordinary amount of publicity in their efforts to increase organ donation in the Netherlands. They say some 1,400 people are waiting for transplants here this year. People watching what turned out to be a hoax could download free organ donation forms from their website. A fitting tribute, say producers, to their station's founder, who died from kidney failure exactly 5 years ago. Others criticized the producers for using the hoax to increase their ratings. Lauren Comito for CBS News, Amsterdam.
The producers say the patients were in on the hoax all along, and the woman doesn't really have a terminal brain tumor. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Hey, Ken. Picking up a prescription?
Yeah, my erosive acid reflux.
Me too. I take Protonix, pantoprazole sodium.
Does it work?
One Protonix tablet every morning helped control daytime, even nighttime acid reflux symptoms.
Nighttime symptoms too?
Yep. It even helped repair acid reflux damage. And I save on my Protonix prescription.
Think I could save on my copay?
Check your health plan. Hey, where are you going?
To call my doctor about Protonix.
Protonix copays are not less than generic drugs. Prescription Protonix heals acid-related erosions in the esophagus and relieves associated frequent and persistent heartburn. Most patients heal within 8 weeks. Your results may vary. Doctors may prescribe Protonix longer to maintain healing. Studies lasted 12 months. Other serious stomach conditions may still exist. In studies, the most common side effects were headache, diarrhea, and gas. Go to ProtonicSavings.com or call 888-5-REFLUX to learn more about Protonix, acid reflux disease, and savings. See our ad in the Saturday Evening Post. Ask your doctor if Protonix is right for you.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
And the plot thickens. As of this moment, Alberto Gonzalez clings to his post as Attorney General of the United States. But his authorization of the termination of U.S. attorneys continues to produce some very interesting wrinkles. Our music of the moment is from Bob Geldof and the Boomtown Rats. It's called Whitehall 1212. And that's the number you call for Scotland Yard in London when you want to report a crime. Every week at this time, Brad Friedman joins us. He's the proprietor of bradblog.com. He's our go-to guy and one of the leaders in the nation in election protection, election integrity issues. And it's really sad that he can't finish his work and move on to something else. You've been kind of bogged down in this election protection racket for, what, 3, 4, 5 years now, Brad?
Something like that. But we'll be getting it solved at any moment, and then I'll be able to move on. You know, it's funny that you mentioned the plot thickens, because as you came on the air, I was just thinking, perhaps great minds think alike. I don't know. But I was thinking the worm continues to turn as this... this election business, this now this vote caging stuff, seems to thicken.
Yeah.
With a report that I just posted at Brad Blog on the DNC, who has now, surprisingly enough, put out a statement concerning the vote caging testimony last week of Monica Goodling. So even the DNC is now paying attention, Peter.
Now, talk a little bit about this terminology. What does vote caging mean?
Well, essentially, as Goodling said in her testimony to the U.S. House Judiciary Committee, it comes from it's a direct mailing term. Essentially, when they would place returned envelopes into various cages, essentially. In this context, what it means is when the Republican Party sent out registered mail with you know, return requested, a do not forward on it. When they received the letters back saying nobody answered this, nobody answered the door at this particular address, they would then use that information to then challenge voters to get them off the voter rolls or to, you know, show up on election day and contest their right to vote at all. Well, as it turns out, they did this in 2004. And some of their email got out, was sent to the wrong address, was forwarded on to investigative journalist Greg Palast, who then reported on it back in 2004 for the BBC. And what he found was that you had thousands of names of folks who were, surprise, surprise, Democrats. They were in minority areas. They were homeless shelters and so on and so forth. And these were the people that the Republicans were going to challenge on election day in Ohio, I'm sorry, in Florida in this case, this particular list, back in 2004. It's highly illegal. It's a felony. And in fact, back in 1986, there was a case where the Republican National Committee agreed in a consent decree to not do that again because they got caught doing it back in the 80s. So here they are getting caught again in 2004. Palast reports on it. Folks like myself picked up on it, you know, but the mainstream media, as usual, stayed away from it. The Democrats stayed away from it. And even last week when Monica Goodling showed up to give her startling testimony and she mentioned Karl Rove's former aide, Tim Griffin, as having been involved in vote caging, nobody on the committee said a word about it. There was some questioning from Linda Sanchez, Congresswoman out of California, but she didn't really understand what it was. She asked about it briefly. That was sort of it, and they moved on. Nobody in the mainstream media picked it up. Of course, I ran upstairs and posted about it immediately at Brad Blog.
Well, and you were sending some digital flares over the Beltway, right?
I was indeed. And I was, you know me, I'll run around with my hair on fire, you know, anything to get folks' attention to some of this stuff. And, in fact, I did contact folks on Conyers' staff during those hearings to let them know, hey, guys, you need to follow on follow up on this. This is just a huge admission, what Monica Goodling just said. Basically, she said that the Deputy Attorney General, Paul McNulty, when he gave his testimony to the to Congress, that he did not tell the truth about what he knew concerning Tim Griffin and his vote-caging activities that are shown in this email, and it's posted at Brad Blog now, some of it, showing that, you know, Griffin was sending around these caging lists. This is a huge admission. It's incredible that no one followed up on it at the time. And while I've been trying to make noise about it, and Greg Palast has been posting some exclusives over at Brad Blog on it, it's by and large gone unreported until yesterday when over at Slate, Dahlia Lithwick posted a very good article on vote caging, on Goodling's admissions, gave Palast the due that he deserved, and she basically admitted the reason why they didn't report on it at Slate is because nobody knew what the hell vote caging was.
Yeah.
And neither did anybody, apparently, in the mainstream media.
Now,
to me, that's incredible.
Now, Brad, one of the things that came out of the forensics that were applied to the 2000 election debacle in Florida was that there was a firm hired to purge the voter rolls of, allegedly, it was limited to ex-felons. But it appears that they went much further than that. Is that part and parcel of this vote caging concept?
You know, I think it's certainly related to it. Basically, this is, and all of this has come together so much of what, as you know, that I've been reporting for years at BradBlog. It all amounts basically to Republicans doing anything and everything they can to keep people from voting. Specifically, minorities, elderly, urban poor, folks who tend to vote Democrat more than Republican, they want to shave them off the rolls any way they can. So, yeah, they have been purging registration lists. They've been moving forward with this notion that there's this massive Democratic voter fraud going on in order to try to shave people off, purge people off of those polls, off of those rolls, and then challenge them at the polls on Election Day. So, you know, we've got, or at least we have recently, historically had elections that have been incredibly close, and they have realized, hey, if we can keep a few hundred, a few thousand, or more Democratic votes from being cast at all, mm-hmm. it's going to be to our advantage. That's what they've been doing. They have been gaming this system from top to bottom, and to the Democrats' discredit, if that's a word, they have done very little to combat it, unfortunately, even in the face of smoking gun evidence, such as you had going back to 2004 with Tim Griffin's caging lists. Mm-hmm. And I should add, by the way, he has been, until this week, he had been promoted to the U.S. prosecutor U.S. attorney position in Arkansas.
In Little Rock, yeah.
In Little Rock. He was Karl Rove's right-hand man. And some breaking news late last night at BradBlog concerns the fact that Greg Palast met with John Conyers, who says we are not done with Griffin yet, and who apparently indicated that Conyers indicated that he would have no idea how the scheme could have moved forward unless Karl Rove was aware of it. So the bead continues to be drawn towards the White House, towards Rove. The question also continues to be, what the hell are the Democrats going to do about it at this point?
And the stonewall that Alberto Gonzalez has erected and is trying to protect, in my view, is related to these very issues. That the U.S. attorney firing scandal has really spun out of control because they thought they'd be able to just keep it as a personnel issue, and even with you know, a little noise here and there, that it would evaporate sooner or later. But you know, people like you and Greg Palast and others, to your credit, have not you know, given up and said, "Oh, I guess Bush is going to keep him." And you've really dug in, and what we're finding here is that the story goes much deeper. And that perhaps, and I'm speculating now, what Gonzalez is doing is trying to stay there long enough to protect Rove and to keep as much of this information from coming out as possible. But it appears that the leaks in this dam are too numerous to plug with, well, with Alberto's little fingers.
And yeah, and I would suggest that Alberto is being kept on precisely for that. Obviously, he's a capable bagman might not be the right word here, but he is, you know, more than capable of holding off the dogs for as long as possible. He seems willing to lie, prevaricate, obfuscate, whatever he needs to do to keep things from moving forward. So I would suggest that even though Bush is taking a hit, that's one of the reasons why he's going to keep him there, because he knows he has his man and his protection there. And let me just also toss in quickly the you know, a lot of those addresses that they were caging out of Florida were not just minorities, but a lot of the folks who didn't send back the, their or who bounced back their mailing was because they were military folks and they were serving, hello, overseas in Iraq. So, right, they were not around to answer that letter. So we're actually shaving people off the rolls, it seems, who are across the ocean fighting in Iraq for this country. But the Republicans were more than happy to do it, it seems.
We're going to take a break and continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. You got a question about vote caging and what kind of cages they use? Give us a call toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That number is 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Show rolls on. Want to shout out a big hello to our new listeners in Portland, Oregon on KPOJ. continue our weekly visit with his Bradness. That's Brad Friedman from bradblog.com in the classic green and yellow sweater. And you can log on to his website for a lot of great information. Steve in Salinas joins us now. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I don't want Gonzalez to resign. I would much rather he be impeached, because if he resigns, then everybody will just forget about it. But if he's impeached, then they can subpoena Karl Rove, they can subpoena John Ashcroft, they can subpoena Monica Goodling, and I think the thing might go right on up the food chain.
Well, Steve, I agree with you. I believe that we need to know the facts, and we need to hold people accountable. And for me, I've got a nice little four-mica table here, and I will never take impeachment off this table. It doesn't mean that it's my top priority or that we should drop everything and just go after these guys in some vengeful or vindictive way. But, you know, the evidence is clear here. And for the Democrats, I mean, I heard Al Gore on TV the other night, and he was asked about impeaching Bush and Cheney. And he said, you know, there's only a year and a half left and it'd be a distraction and all that. Well, hell, the Republicans were busy impeaching Bill Clinton in 1998, a year and a half before the end of his term.
And it give those guys another year and a half to screw more things up.
Well,
we several times, and he says, well, we don't have time to do that because we've got to fix all these other things. But the longer they're in, the more things are to fix.
Well, and I just think we have this fundamental issue that really goes to the foundation of our democracy. If we can't trust elections, and if we see that the machines are hackable, that the systems are not uniform, the systems are subject to caging or other forms of manipulation or gaming, then we have lost what we believe we had and we think is so valuable to us. Brett?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and I would share the concerns of the caller. I'd love to see Gonzalez impeached as well, although I suspect if he was impeached, he would, in fact, resign before we were able to get at the information that we'd love to get at via that sort of impeachment process. But the point is correct. Perhaps Al Gore and the other Democrats are more concerned with the political situation than people like you and me and the citizens out here who are realizing there needs to be accountability. And I think we've talked about it before, but if there is no accountability here, the bar has been forever lowered for a president, no matter if it's a Republican, Democrat, Hillary Clinton, or anybody else. You've got to bring accountability here and push back what this crew has done to our system, or else the toxins and the cancer will remain in the system forevermore.
Yeah, why would if the Republicans steal the next election, why would they pay any attention to the Democrats? They know the Democrats won't fight back, so why bother with them?
Well, that's right, and not to mention the rule of law, not to mention the constitutional duty, as I see it, for our members of Congress to carry out their role in impeaching a president when you see you've got high crimes and misdemeanors. Is there any question that there is high crimes and misdemeanors here? I mean, I think the only question is trying to, cull them down to few enough that they can remain manageable and that folks can understand them when you move forward in impeachment hearings.
Well, and the legal lingo, is probable cause. And this is Alberto Gonzalez, who participated in the framing of the illegal domestic surveillance program conducted by the NSA, where he eviscerated probable cause, okay, so that, my telephone or email traffic can be tapped without adhering to the Fourth Amendment standard. And here the Democrats have clearly probable cause that not only did Gonzalez lie, but he suborned a routine and continued breaking of the law in the NSA spying. He also supported the rewriting of the language related to torture and detention that I believe is unconstitutional in relation to Guantanamo Bay and other places. And so this is not just a speeding ticket or, that he told a little white lie about a sex act with an intern or something like that. This is fundamental to the oath of office that he took and the corrupt way that he has managed that office since he was given it.
Well, you've got a guy in Alberto Gonzalez who actually said with a straight face in congressional testimony that Americans don't have the right to habeas corpus. despite the fact that it's spelled out in the Constitution. And he actually made the case that because the Constitution says you may not remove habeas corpus, or you may not deny habeas corpus, something like that,
yeah.
This doesn't mean you have the right in the first place.
Yeah.
It was just a mind-blowing argument. This is the guy who is the Attorney General of the United States of America.
Yeah, and he wants to overturn not only a couple of hundred years of precedent in the United States, but British common law related to habeas corpus. It goes back, I think, to 1066 or somewhere around there.
So, yeah, you need to bring accountability here, or else this is, you know, made to stand.
Steve,
we move forward and we say this is how our system now works.
Steve, if you haven't seen it already, go to impeachgonzalez.org. There's a great little video there of his prevarications and his flip-flops.
He lied?
And you can sign up, add your name to their petition. I recommend you do that.
ImpeachGonzalez.org.
That's correct. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Brad Friedman, stay with us. We'll continue after the break here on the Peter B. Collins Show. My number is toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
We were looking for an inclusive community, so we joined a Unitarian Universalist church where we can really live our values.
Did you know the American Red...
Seize the day and save money. That's the slogan of Stardate Solar, a company providing you with the highest quality solar power for your Monterey Bay Area home or business at the guaranteed lowest price. And that's the idea behind the Stardate Solar Power Hour. I'm your host, Dale Julin. Every Saturday at high noon, our nationally known cast of energy experts will tell you the latest news about the coming solar economy. And you'll also hear about the politics of solar power as well. The Stardate Solar Power Hour, Saturdays at noon and at StardateSolar.com.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Hey, what are you having for lunch?
My personal chef is making it now.
Your personal chef?
Yeah, the lunch lady in the school cafeteria.
Kids should think of me as their personal chef. Well-balanced meals at school are very important for their bodies and their minds. Make sure they eat right and take advantage of the personal chef in their school cafeteria.
Stay fit, eat right. Looking Good California is a public service of the California School Nutrition Association. For help with your family's nutrition, visit stayfiteatright.org.
Tomorrow Matters, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, will be moving from Sundays to a daily spot Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll still be bringing in the guests, and you'll still be calling in with your questions and ideas, and we'll still be working collectively to set the standards for a more sustainable future. But we'll be doing it 5 times a week. Starting May 14th, join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m., because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
You know, I,
The show on KRXA 540.
The,
weekdays from noon to two.
The internet won't leave me alone. Listen, 2,000 miles I roam just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of a bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, sitting on the dock of a bay, way
live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Another one of those San Francisco values is instant runoff voting. It's a great concept. It could break down the two-party system, and that's why it doesn't get exported to too many places. We're talking about elections, election integrity, election protection, and election fraud. It's our hour with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And if you'd like to talk with us, Brad's with us for the remainder of the hour, and their line's available toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And, Brad, I want to drill in a little deeper here on the work of Greg Pallast that has been featured at bradblog.com over the past week or 10 days, starting, of course, with the testimony that we described earlier from Monica Goodling. She was the reluctant witness from the Justice Department who had to be given a grant of immunity. And despite that, I didn't get to watch the testimony because I was on an airplane that day, but I understand that she invoked the Fifth Amendment at least once about not incriminating herself on some of these issues. Now, hearing her testimony about vote caging, about Tim Griffin, and that, of course, leads to Karl Rove, she did have a real concern that caused her to seek that grant of immunity, did she not?
Well, clearly. And it's questionable exactly why and, you know, which aspect of all of this. I mean, because she made a number of admissions. The one that is being pursued, even by the Inspector General at the Department of Justice, concerns her her admissions about hiring practices, and that, in fact, they were asking career staffers that they were hiring, well, who did you vote for? And determining if they were, quote-unquote, a liberal Democrat or not. And this is just, well, frankly, it's strictly against the law when it comes to hiring for something like that. These were not political appointee positions, but rather career attorneys who were going to go into the civil rights group and the voting rights group and so forth at the DOJ. So we know for a fact that she was protecting herself on that. What else she was protecting herself on, we don't know. Does she know more about the vote caging that she referenced? It's hard to know exactly what she did know specifically because, the members of the House Judiciary Committee did not ask very many questions about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Her invoking of the Fifth, it seemed to be, and I never got to look into this in detail, but it seemed to be sort of a pro forma thing. She was asked at the very top of her testimony a very specific question, in which case she invoked her Fifth Amendment rights, and then thereafter she was granted immunity by John Conyers officially.
So I see. Okay.
I think that's how that came about. I'm not an attorney here, so I can't tell you for sure, but that's what it seemed like to me when I was watching it.
Okay. Now, talk a little bit about Greg Pallast. I have terrific admiration for Greg, and it is so frustrating that, with the exception of the fine program Democracy Now!, that he doesn't have a regular outlet in the United States, and he's doing some of the best investigative journalism, not only related to election issues, but also the fraudsters in New Orleans and just many other issues. He's a great muckraking reporter. He's got a real strong presence and good personality. I mean, he should be on 60 Minutes. If I were the emperor, I would decree that.
Well, in fact, he does, and of course, I think one of the reasons why he and I are drawn together here is we're certainly kindred spirits, in a way. You know, we both find it frustrating, I think, when you come out and you report something that you've got these folks so dead to rights. I mean, if you look at, for example, you know, I've been reporting on these hoaxsters at the American Center for Voting Rights for years, and they are directly connected to Karl Rove. And, again, got them dead to rights, have been reporting on this for years, got the documentation, got everything else, Ann Coulter's voter fraud down there in Florida, got her dead to rights. But what does it take to get anybody's attention? As long as I mentioned the ACVR, let me toss in that Murray Wass over at National Journal did a fabulous story this week, an expose on our old friend Thor Hearn.
Mm-hmm.
Have not been able to cover it yet at bradblog.com, but hopefully will very soon. In any case, so Greg had covered this story, the vote caging, back in 2004, prior to the election, back when actually following up on it might have made a difference. The fact that the media failed to do so, I think, directly led to the fact that Congress failed to do so. And you can take a look at the way things have happened this week. Look, Monica Goodling testified a week ago last Wednesday, or May 23rd, I think is what it was.
Okay.
And it wasn't until an article late in the week from Slate that discussed the vote caging that suddenly the next day the DNC comes out with a statement about vote caging pointing to the Slate article. I don't suspect they would have done that had it not been for finally some mainstream media coverage, if you consider Slate to be mainstream media. So, you know, Greg can write all he wants. He can have books on the New York Times bestseller list, as in fact he does. His latest, Armed Madhouse, is on the New York Times bestseller list.
There's a new updated edition that just came out. They sent us a new copy.
Just came out, right?
Yeah.
And I'll also recommend the audio version, since yours truly happens to be on there a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But hopefully it's on that New York Times bestseller list with a bullet at this point. In the wake of Goodling's testimony, because he reports exactly what he put out there for the BBC back in 2004, that not a single American mainstream media organization reported on. What's the explanation for that? I don't know that I really have one here. So this is a long answer to your short question to say all I can tell you is I share the frustration that I know that Pallast certainly must feel, and yet I know that he and I both march forward, do what we can to expose this stuff, and hope that the rest of the world catches up with us. And you know what? There are signs that the rest of the world is catching up with us, at least a little bit.
And help me understand the sequence of events this past week, as Tim Griffin resigned and Greg Pallast had a very interesting on-camera interview with John Conyers, the Democratic chair of the House Judiciary Committee. Which shoe dropped first?
Well, the shoe that dropped was that Griffin had resigned, and frankly resigned quite suddenly. Essentially, you know, when he resigned, it was effective tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty extraordinary. He got out in very quick order, you know, not even a month from now and so on and so forth. So that was certainly notable and didn't really make a top headline, surprisingly enough. So he resigned, and then it wasn't until, I believe, 24 hours or so after the announcement of his resignation that Pallast had this interview with Conyers. It was a pre-scheduled interview. Actually on a different topic entirely that they had been planning on doing, and Greg told me he was going to be doing this, but knew that he would take the opportunity at that time to talk to him about the vote caging matters. And it is apparently during that interview when Conyers informed Greg that after the hearing, a week and a half ago or whatever it was now, when Goodling made her admissions,
mm-hmm.
Conyers' office then finally went to the BBC and said, hey, give us the documents that you have, the emails that you have, which, by the way, came into their possession because they were sent to various addresses at georgewbush.org before the 2004 election. And, in fact, the address for Bush's campaign was georgewbush.com. The georgewbush.org site had been set up by someone else as a satirical site, but what do you know? They started getting all of these emails in their catch-all mailbox when people would send to, names like Tim Griffin at georgewbush.org, which is not a real address. It would go to them instead, and that's how they ended up with this rather damning email.
Which you can see.
We've got, a bit of it posted at bradblog.com, and more of it is certainly available in Greg's book, Armed Madhouse.
And this also suggests rationale or motivation to avoid delivering the alleged millions of emails that were generated using these non-governmental websites at the Republican National Committee.
Well, that's right. I mean, they had all, you know, a network of email domains and so forth where they were avoiding the official .gov addresses under the presumption that that stuff would not be discoverable in, well, in a case like the one that we happen to be in the middle of now. You know, it should also be noted that those emails, you know, Tim Griffin has never denied them. He's never, as a matter of fact, he's never come out and said, oh, that wasn't from me. I didn't send that. Or those caging lists, that was for something else entirely. They've never denied it. They haven't had to because no one asked them about it. And indeed, one of the emails that was recently turned over to the Judiciary Committee from Department of Justice, I believe, or maybe from the White House, I can't recall now, actually has, I think it is Tim Griffin, writing to somebody and saying, oh, you know what, don't worry about that caging stuff. Nobody in the media has picked it up other than the British reporter, Greg Palast. So,
that's an interesting kind of notoriety for Greg.
Yeah, that's right, who is notably not British at all. But he does work for the BBC, and so, you know, they were laughing in the White House, saying, hey, we don't have to worry about this stuff. Nobody in the American media notices. It's just the BBC. So don't worry about it, guys. You're safe and sound.
Well, that's because the American media has other priorities, Brad. There were two whales that swam up the river under the, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge and up to the Sacramento Delta. I mean, Paris Hilton's going to jail. Lindsay Lohan might be behind the wheel again, and the media can't drop those stories to cover, you know, Tim Griffin and vote caging.
Do you hate whales?
No, I love whales. I just thought the story wasn't very important, and it took a lot of media time and a whole lot of satellite trucks.
I see. Well, that's all well and good, but by the time we get back from a commercial break, watch for the headline at bradblog.com, Peter B. Collins hates whales.
All right. We got about 2 minutes before the break. Anything else about caging, about this testimony that we ought to cover before we move on to Karl Rove's supermarket encounter?
Well, you know, not for the moment. I'd refer folks to bradblog.com. There's a whole lot of stuff there. I think this is something to keep your eye on, though, and I think it is something that people need to take some action on, which is to say, pick up your phone, call your Congress member, tell them now is the time to investigate this matter and to call these people in under oath and get some answers on all of this. On all of this and all of the stuff concerning American Center for Voting Rights that we probably won't have much time to get into, but we've talked about before, and if people need more, go to bradblog.com/ACVR. Congress is now the only way, I believe, we're going to get any accountability here because, as we know, the Department of Justice is entirely cooked.
All righty. Well, the one thing I'm picking up here from Brad Blog is that Karl Rove and I have one thing in common. We like Barks root beer.
I'll let you explain that on the other side.
Well, we got another minute here before the break.
Time?
So who is it here who it was Brett Kimberlin,
yeah,
who encountered Karl Rove at a Safeway in Washington, D.C.?
Yes, he did. excuse me. He's my partner. Over co-founder, well, he's the director of JusticeThroughMusic.org, put out a terrific video, by the way, called Happy Springtime Bush is Over.
Oh, yeah, he was on with us to talk about that recently.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, he happened to have a chance encounter with Karl Rove in the Safeway on Memorial Day, posed for some pictures with him, and when Rove asked him, well, how was he going to spend the day, Brett apparently said back to him that we're going to remember all the troops that Bush sent to be killed in this godforsaken war. And then when he asked where he was from, Brett said, velvetrevolution.us, we support regime change here at home.
And has the IRS knocked on the Velvet Revolution headquarters door yet?
And not yet, but we're expecting them any minute. And Brett also reports that the shopping list contains only toilet paper, Barks root beer, and Land O'Lakes butter. No food whatsoever.
We'll continue in a moment with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
hand in hand. Take it all out on your stride.
A radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540, KRXA, 6 to 9 a.m. weekdays.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Why are realtors from Los Angeles spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to defeat Measure A here in Monterey County?
It sure isn't because they want to save our farmland.
The developers and supervisors oppose Measure A because it puts an end to their cozy development deals.
Cozy development deals like the massive Rancho San Juan development that was approved by the Board of Supervisors but rejected by 76% of voters.
It's true. 76% of the voters opposed Rancho San Juan because it was wrong for Monterey County. But the developers pushed it through anyway.
That's why we need to pass ballot Measure A to protect our quality of life.
Measure A is a common-sense, community-minded plan to control growth that was written by the people of Monterey County.
It lets the people decide how fast we should grow.
So join the League of Women Voters and the California Nurses Association, who all support Measure A, because it lets the community have a voice about our future.
And that's why the Community General Plan Committee paid for this message. Vote yes on Measure A.
Good afternoon, Michael Kidd with KRXA Traffic for Monterey, brought to you by Mancini Sleep World. Start your summer with a great night's sleep. Call Mancini Sleep World at 864-SLEEP. Southbound 101 leaving Silicon Valley, that is heavy from Highway 85 to Coyote Caulk Creek Drive. It also gets heavy again through Gilroy, Prunedale, and into Salinas. Now, if you're going out southbound Highway 17 from 85, the Lexington Reservoir, it also gets heavy again from the Summit into Santa Cruz. Road hazard to report in Live Oak, Soquel Drive at Mission Drive. Traffic lights are not working. That turn light is stuck on red. A road hazard in Prunedale, 101 northbound before 156 west. It's an object on the roadway, and that has been since the last half hour. Maximize your miles this summer with Chrysler. Check out the all-new Sebring sedan with up to 32 highway miles per gallon based on EPA estimates. Hurry into your Chrysler dealer for details. 55 degrees, Michael Kidd.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Final few minutes in our weekly visit with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com.
Before the hour, and Brad Friedman, I wanted to get an update from you on the status of what we call the Holt Bill, H.R. 811, which was intended to address the problems with electronic voting machines, and as we have discussed repeatedly on our program, it's a great disappointment to you and other election integrity activists, the way the bill has been shaped and how it has come out of committee. Is there any chance at this point that it will be amended, or are we kind of stuck with the work of the committee?
Well, there is a chance that it could be amended. The efforts have not have somewhat turned over onto the Senate side, where it where Dianne Feinstein's even worse bill is now in the committee there. It was dropped a week or so ago. introduced a week or so ago. It's even worse. It's even more watered down. It's even more disappointing. But efforts have been turned over to the Senate side because in the House, you know, we can bring an amendment on the House floor. We can find somebody out there to do it. But if it doesn't pass, and now you're talking about having to get 200-something folks in favor of it, I think that that might be a bad sign for the Senate side. They might say, oh, well, this couldn't even pass in the House, so let's not even add it to the Senate bill. So it might be a bit easier at this point to turn to the Senate to encourage Feinstein and those folks on the Rules Committee to amend that bill to, if nothing else, get these damned touchscreen DRE voting systems out of that bill, ban them, require a paper ballot, one that is actually counted for every vote cast. So I would encourage folks to contact Feinstein and, of course, their own and Boxer as well, but other senators, wherever they may be, other representatives, wherever they may be, to at least educate them about this fact, because we're headed towards yet another meltdown, I'm afraid, with if the Holt bill and the Feinstein bill are allowed to pass as is.
And you know, when you try to look at the underlying issues here that have prevented a rational and sound bill from emerging from this process, and as we've discussed, you were there at the beginning, helping to frame it, and then you know, it kind of wobbled out of control from your point of view. But you know, it's just striking that we have a bunch of people, particularly Democrats, who do not see the threat to their own self-interest, much less our democracy, and who cannot quite grok, I guess, that, you know, HAVA was a big mistake and a huge waste of money, and they're now throwing good money after bad, trying to do a partial fix to a system that cannot be saved.
Well, that's right, but I should also add that they are being, in many ways, extorted, and I hope that's not too strong a word, but by forces who are coming in, misinforming them, largely in the name of People for the American Way, a group that usually does good things, but they have come in and they've said, look, if you ban these touchscreen voting machines, the entirety of the civil rights community is going to come down on you hard. Now, never mind the fact that they really can't produce anybody in the civil rights community who would do that. That's what they're telling these Congress members, senators, and representatives. And, you know, if there's anything Democrats don't want to do is to tick off the civil rights community. So they're falling for it. It's a scam. But unfortunately, People for the American Way has a lot more lobbying dollars and lobbying access than folks like you and me, and they seem to be controlling this debate. And it's really appalling. And when this thing falls apart, I suspect we will be able to point a finger straight back to People for the American Way and what they're doing here, because I think it's really insidious.
Yeah, and it's sad. They will not listen. We've tried several times to get them to come on the program and discuss this with you, and they've decided to, well, just to avoid it and throw up the stone wall.
They won't even show up and debate the issue, eh?
Nope. They have declined explicitly.
What does that tell you?
Chris and Salinas, you're next here. Go right ahead on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
I wanted to say that Bernie Sanders and Sherrod Brown both have signed on to the Feinstein debacle. I actually spoke for a brief moment this morning on Tom Hartman with Bernie Sanders and brought up the fact that we need to get rid of these DRE machines, and I said that the VPAT doesn't count, and then he just comes back and says that, well, we still need to add a paper trail to those counties that that have paperless DREs. So they just don't get it, you know. These paper trails really just don't provide us any protection in our vote. But Bernie Sanders is someone that we could probably convince, hopefully, that to amend that bill to eliminate these DREs.
A massive education effort is needed, and I'm trying to do certainly my part, but it's going to, you know, take everyone within earshot of this radio show to get in there and start doing something, because they really don't understand it. And no, adding paper trails to a touchscreen machine makes things worse, not better, and they need to understand that. They need to be educated, and they need to understand that there are solutions for disabled voters and so forth that don't pose the dangers that touchscreen DRE, direct recording electronic voting machines, do.
Chris,
we've got to educate them.
Thank you for your call, Chris.
No, hey, thank you, because you're the only guy out there that's bringing this to the airwaves that I know of.
Well, we're doing our part, and I'm going to be in Washington in mid-June. I have been promised an interview with Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio, and I'll bring the issue up if I can. Brad Friedman, thanks for joining us.
As always, a pleasure. Have a great one, Peter.
To you until...
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty news shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Hi, it's Sheila Gale reminding you to listen to my show, 12-Step Talk, Uncensored, all about addictions, every Saturday, 4 to 5 in the afternoon, 12-Step Talk, Uncensored, where we deal with addictions, taking the shame and the blame out of this horrible disease. 12-Step Talk, Uncensored, it's about time. Sponsored by Sun Street Centers, Building Healthy Communities, a drug and alcohol treatment center in Monterey County. For more information, call 753-5135, Sun Street Centers.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Tropical Storm Barry formed this afternoon in the Gulf of Mexico, and drought-stricken Florida has put out the welcome mat.
This is Rob Milford in Fort Myers, Florida. The palm trees and bamboo here along the Caloosahatchee River are swaying in the wind, the soaking rain from Barry now covering most of the state, with landfall expected north of Tampa. He's the second named storm of the season, and while this first weekend of June will be a washout for the beach and boating crowd, Barry brings desperately needed rainfall. Rob Milford, CBS News, Fort Myers, Florida.
At the Centers for Disease Control, Director Julie Gerberding says they've tracked down the airline passengers who sat near Andrew's speaker.
We have been able to get in touch with every one of the passengers that we would consider to be at increased risk in front and behind the patient.
Gerberding says speaker's father-in-law, CDC microbiologist Robert Cooksey, may have been involved in preparing one of the lab tests that determined speaker was carrying a rare and dangerous strain of tuberculosis. In Torrance, California, the funeral for Army Private Joseph Anzac Jr., one of three American soldiers captured in an ambush south of Baghdad 20 days ago. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman is there.
The procession now coming to an end here on Pacific Coast Highway. The flag-draped casket of Joe Anzac Jr. being brought to the high school on a horse-drawn carriage. In a glass carriage, we can see the casket. Several hundred people have gathered here, many carrying American flags. And now you can hear people begin to applaud. A final salute to Joe Anzac. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Torrance, California.
Anzac was found dead of multiple gunshot wounds. The other two soldiers are still missing. Fred Thompson took the first step today. The actor and former senator from Tennessee formed a committee to explore a possible run for the White House. Of all the candidates in the crowded Republican field, Jonathan Martin of Politico.com says Thompson's gotten the most attention lately by not being one of them.
There's no question that Senator Thompson, you know, sort of looks good right now, you know, in the previews, if you will. But when he's on the screen for the feature-length film, the critics are going to be a lot harsher. So these guys always sort of get, you know, roses and bouquets when they're sort of sniffing around the possibility. But then once they